that so many of our RSG members have returned for day two. And thank you as well to the members of the public who are back. We're going to start immediately today with public comment. And then after that, we will break into the work teams again, and they will work through 12:15 today. And at that point, they will have finished their final proposals to come out of this process. We will break for lunch at that point, come back from lunch, and each of the three work teams will have 10 or 15 minutes or so to report back on any changes that will have been made this morning based upon both the comments that they received in plenary yesterday as well as some of the public comment they heard yesterday and additional public comment they'll hear today. And the written comments that they receive at the end of the day from the plenary discussion. And then at that point, we will have a discussion about how the RSG wants to brief the BRTF on their proposals and the results. So I'd like to ask Ken perhaps to indicate the list of public commenters.
Good morning. I have my pair of glasses today, so Rick will not be Bill. And we have 11 cards this morning, and as we did yesterday, I'm going to try to do by people, those who have declared a subject matter. Then we have interest in oyster farming, special closures, and then some specific geographies, and then just general comments on proposals. So I've kind of organized that way. And our first speaker will be Stacy Carlson, followed by Captain Smitty. And remember the 30-second sign and the stop sign, which we didn't have to use very much yesterday because everybody's kind of got this close to two-minute thing down. So, Stacy Carlson.
Yeah, thank you. Stacy Carlson, Marin County Agricultural Commissioner. I'm here to speak on the issue of the Drake's Estero and particularly the interest in oyster production in terms of its economic value, agricultural production, and environmental protection. Particularly interested is, and I'm sure the facts have been presented either written or in oral testimony about the production of oysters there represent a major production of shucked oysters and fresh oysters in the county, represent probably our most sustainable farming practices in the county or anywhere probably that goes in terms of low inputs or no inputs virtually, and the reliance on a closed system there from seed to oyster. And many other factors could be discussed in terms of the value in of production in its local distribution, and the replacement of that, if that was lost or reduced, would be increased transportation and inputs being brought in, farming products being brought in at a huge environmental expense. We've already pressured rising costs of fuels and all these other environmental issues associated with transportation. And bringing oysters from other states or even other countries, third world countries possibly, could affect quality, human health and safety. Whereas we have local production currently is quite invaluable to our agricultural sustainability. Now, when I say that, we have diverse farming practices in Marin County, and it would be quite a shock to lose one of these particular areas of farming, in that it we have an economic multiplier effect in our county of having jobs, production, and one, you know, chipping away at our farming in even in a way that would impact oyster productions could cause a calamity in our farming in general as a great value. So having said that, I request that you consider allowances at any cost. You know, I don't think there's an environmental impact from what I've read. Actually, there's some environmental benefits from, and they're not, they're producing what they raise and not harvesting native populations, et cetera. So I support that, and as a commissioner of agriculture, it's very important that we maintain that production system. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Carlson. Captain Smitty, followed by Tracy Buell.
Good morning. Don't you love the government? all these special terms they come up with here. Illusion of protection, paper closures. I'd like to inject a little reality back into this whole process.
The microphone.
And I wanted,
get
on the mic, all right. My voice is loud enough. I wanted to get into the issue around these the special closures. And going into this as a regulatory area, we need to consider more of an education asset. We need more education for these closures than we do for regulations. And I'm talking about closures like around the islands or around Egg Rock, areas of these closures. We've been talking about that these areas are to extend out 1,000 feet. 1,000 feet, folks. You can't see a bird very well, even with a pair of binoculars, 1,000 feet. 300 feet is even more difficult. I would propose 100. With that said, I would like to see that if you're going to do anything with those ranges, that they'd be set up in a tiered. So if you're going to go out to 300 feet, have it as a your noise abatement and speed control within those ranges, and then outside of that range, you know, would be full speed. But I'd like to see you to look at the ranges as a tiered stepping process, as opposed to an exclusionary zone. This is a public resource, and the public needs to have access to that. I'm a professional, and people that basically are on the water understand these things and have respect for that. So just keep that in mind in the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Captain Smitty. We now have Tracy Buell, followed by Peter Bogdan.
Good morning, everyone. How y'all doing this morning? You guys know me from the commercial fishing salmon fishing fantasy camp at Point Arena, and I appreciate all of your patience in dealing with our requests yesterday. I really appreciate the efforts that you guys made on our behalf. And I'm here today in a different capacity. I've been put to task by all of the sport fishermen that I know in Anchor Bay, which is my home. I live right there near Fish Rocks. They're concerned about the special closure at Fish Rocks primarily because of if you put a 300-foot closure around the thing, there's a small gap between the shore and the island that all of the kayakers and paddlers and even some of the small fishing boats use when the wind really gets up. It's one of the only places that you can actually get up a little ways up the coast to do non-motorized travel on our coast. It's one of the safest places for that. If you close that quadrant of the island, you'll end up with a hazardous situation forcing people to go around the outside of the island, which as nobody knows that island better than I do. I've spent most of my life in on or under the water around there, and I would be challenged to an extreme going around the outside of the island, especially when the current and the wind gets up. So I didn't know if anybody was really aware of that, what a big issue it was. And also on the western shore of the island, it could be an extreme hazard when most everybody that fishes there, yeah, these guys are like in their 80s in 14-foot aluminum skiffs. You know, these old geezers are out there trying to come back from fishing and run into it. We got about a 6-knot current on the end of the island up there. And if you can't come straight by the corner of the island, right straight downswell and up current, if you know what I'm saying, you have a huge chance of broaching in a small aluminum boat trying to go around that. Doesn't sound like a big deal, but these are kind of inexperienced guys that just come for the weekends, and I'm concerned about that, and they've raised that concern. I think it's a valid issue. If you were to close something on Fish Rocks, maybe there's a potential for closing sort of the northeast quadrant up there. That's where most of the birds are anyway. I'm sort of famous for paddling rowing a little 8-foot dinghy out there and in my boxer shorts, and I've never scared a bird off the island. I've scared the bejeebers out of all the neighbors up there and people in other fishing boats, but I don't think I've ever scared a bird off the south and west side of the island. So anyway, not to make a joke out of it, but thanks for taking that under consideration, too. And thank you very much for all your help. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Buell. Peter Bogdan, followed by Dale De La Rosa.
Good morning. I'd like to make one more comment about study region one. Basically, I know some of the groups have a little trouble with the Stewart's Point area, and when we looked at the percentages of protected area in study region one, we came up with numbers in the high 30s and even 40s, and I'd like the stakeholders to consider that overall impact on study region one. If you need to do anything, just reduce that area there, and just the Woods Point area, to come up with perhaps one quarter protected area, in other words, 25% rather than 38 or 42 or something like that. Thank you.
Thank you, Harbor Master Bogdan. Dale De La Rosa, followed by Alan Jacobs.
I'm back. Yesterday, you probably got the impression that I'm committed to keeping all Assault Point open. And I think yesterday I tried to kind of like give you some heartfelt reasons. And today I'm still in the same vein, but I want to give you some practical things to think about. As I understand it, maybe an unfortunate term was used where one of the state guys mentioned that he wanted to create a Point Lobos-type area in the north. And, I mean, that's okay, although they were trying to distance themselves from that statement. When I look at each one of the proposals, they want to close the northern portion of Salt Point State Park. And there's a problem with that if you want to create a Point Lobos experience. And the problem is there's no access up there. There's access for shore divers like me, and there's access for kayakers. But if you really want to create a Point Lobos experience where you have the road right down along the shore where everybody can go and stop and look, it's not going to work at Salt Point unless you guys, the state, is willing to make some really major expenditures there for new roads. So I think, you know, you better think about that. I mean, as it is, I don't think anybody's complaining about the way to Salt Point is now. Another thing, the more practical side, is the economics. If you want to see what the economics of abalone diving is, go up there in July. In July, the place is a ghost town. And that's because all the abalone divers have gone. And it's not just the abalone divers, it's all the consumptive divers have gone. Ooh, excuse me. And the reason is because if they can't get abalone, they're not going to go there just to spear fish. Thank you. So, I would just, you know, those are some of the practical reasons why Salt Point should be left just the way it is so that it's a really unique area and the whole park should be left open for all the users. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. De La Rosa. Alan Jacobs, followed by Richard Navarro.
Good morning again from me. I just wanted to make a short plea for moderation. I mentioned something about it yesterday. I have here a rough copy of the South Central District, which I made rough calculations of being about a 20% coverage. And when this first happened, it seemed to me outrageously huge. Now I find myself in a position of begging to get 20% for our area. Experiments are, I'm a scientist, so I can say this from my own experience, experiments are best starting small, okay? Whether they're done with explosives or nature, it's always best to start as near the minimum size as possible. And to me, 20% is too large anyway. But as I said, here I am begging for something that's way bigger than I think needs to be. And that regards any zone, whether it's a small portion such as I've been dealing with for just the Mendocino County portion, or whether it's a sub-region or the whole study region, or ultimately the whole state. And I am pleading with you as you go to these meetings, look at what you're proposing. Some of the proposals that I've seen in the beginning were 50% in our area. Some of the ones still out here in the hall are still 50%. It's outrageously far and away too large. Imagine if someone came to where you live and said, we're going to take 50% and make it into a no whatever, no golf zone, no driving zone, no shopping zone. It's too much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobs. Richard Navarro, followed by Jeff Richards.
Thank you. I belong to the SF Tai'i Club and Coastside Fishing Club. I sit on the board of directors with the SF Tai'i Club, which partners up with SF State in Fish and Game and raise 50,000 salmon smolts each year since the 70s. As a fisherman for over 30 years in San Francisco area, I strongly recommend the MLPA Proposal 2XA. Proposal 2XA is the only proposal that seems reasonable to a hook-and-line fisherman like myself. Most of us recreational fishermen only get to go fishing 3 to 5 times a month. Our impact on the fishery has little impact compared to the portrayals by others. I hope that you understand that we have money invested and put major dollars to work in our fishing in our fishing realm and tackle, gas, boats, upkeep, maintenance, berth fees, fishing clubs, all stimulate the economy. It will be a shame if you take away what we love using incorrect science. I would like just to add that my family and friends have looked forward to barbecues throughout the years from fish we caught out on the ocean, and they are devastated with the possibility of no ocean fishing. I have a 4-year-old and an 8-year-old who love to go out on daddy's boat and go fishing, and it looks like this is being taken away chunk by chunk. I was looking forward to the process working with a better fishery with the MLPA. However, from decisions made such as 50-meter rule in an MPA while trolling for salmon has made me and fellow fishermen irate and not trusting of the process. You have set the system up for more failure with concentrated fishing areas you and the feds have established. If you do the math, it's simple. Spread things out. Understand that what fishermen do, and on top of that, understand that the recreational fishermen with hook and line is not even an issue. So I implore you to push the MLPA Proposal 2XA across. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Navarro. Jeff Richards, followed by Arch Richardson.
Hi, I'm Jeff Richards. I'm a recreational fisherman, member of Coastside. I've seen a lot of you. I've been hanging around this process since last April at Pillar Point. Haven't been able to make it as much as I would like, but I'd like to congratulate all of you for surviving this long and making it into the home stretch. I think you guys have, you know, it's been a hard battle. Everybody's had their positions, and it's been emotional at times, and everybody's done their part, but you guys are almost finished, so I got to applaud you for having put in the time and defended your positions and the like. I particularly, as a member of Coastside Fishing Club, have to applaud Tom and Ben and Dan Wolford and Paul and the rest of the folks, because I am in support of MLPA Proposal 2X or 2XA. fundamentally, it's still all about the fish, right? We still want to protect fish. We have some different objectives, but the reason I am here is because, like Rich, I got 10-year-old twins, and they like to fish. That's what we do as our family activity. Okay, it's a simple access issue for a small boat fisherman. I go out of Half Moon Bay. If I can't get to Duxbury or if I can't get down south to go rock fishing, I'm not going. It's weather dependent. As Ben said yesterday, if he's taking his kid out, he's going to Ducks. You're not taking a kid to the Farallons. They're not going to deal with it if you ever want them to come back, right? So I need these places open and accessible to continue sort of a family heritage issue for me. But net, we do kill fish. I mean, it's that simple, okay? That's why I want this to continue, is because I want to kill a few of them. It's okay. We have a healthy fishery, sustainable fishery. That'll be all right. We are talking about consumptive use, right? That said, we don't kill that many. I think there's a stigma that there's a lot of limit-taking cheaters out there, but that's like saying everybody in the environmental community is an Earth First, ELF, house-burning, monkey wrench person. It's just not the case. I probably take a half a dozen salmon a year and 20, 30 rockfish a year. I support MLPA 2XA. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. Arch Richardson, followed by Steve Dillon.
Good morning. A little awareness for state park people in the room, or people that would like to transfer a lateral to state park. Presently, the high brass management of state park, California State Park System in California, comes to Salt Point State Park to go camping. When they decide to go Abalonian, the head ranger brings them to Richardson Land. If you are looking at a future in the state park and want to go to the top, be aware of Proposal 4 and 13. It's the truth. I had to say it. And then in turn, right outside, I see they're selling bumper stickers now that says, "You do, I lose." Thank you for your time. Support Proposal 2XA.
You guys are on the top floor of the building, aren't you?
Hi, Steve Dillon, Coastside Fishing Club. I just wanted to put my support behind 2XA. You know, as a small boat fisherman, recreational angler, I'd like to have access, reasonable access, and also achieve the goals of the MLPA. And I'd like you to all consider, you know, that we need to be realistic. So, 2XA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dillon. Ned McIver, followed by Nancy Ratcliffe.
Morning, everybody. My name is Ned McIver. I'm a member of Coastside Fishing Club. I'm here, more importantly, as a concerned citizen of the state of California. I'm 48 years old. I've never been married, and I have no children. You may ask what that has to do with why I'm here today. Several years ago, I had the opportunity to fish with a good friend of mine and his children. And as we sat on the boat and his son was reeling in a rockfish, he looks at me and he says, "How cool is this?" He had taught his son to fish, and to be able to experience this was a real privilege to me. At a day and age when our society is driven by the computer to go faster and faster and faster and to grow up quicker and quicker and quicker, the quality time that is spent with sons and daughters is fleeting. To take away, as Ben Sleater stated yesterday, people that go out the gate have one option if you have small children, and that is to go to Duxbury Reef. The islands are just going to prevent an enjoyable experience for a child, and he'll never want to fish again. We have the opportunity today to do the right thing. I don't really know why I'm here. I was at Bodega Bay, and I really felt bad after I left that session simply because I didn't feel that we were being heard. I felt we were puppets in a puppet show. I hope that is not the case. We have the opportunity to do something special here today. We can put our names on something that we're proud of. And a result of that, I strongly urge you to support Proposition 2XA. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McIver. Nancy Ratcliffe is our final speaker.
Hi, I have a short poem to read. After months of MLPA meetings, I finally have something pleasant to say. I support Proposal 2XA. This proposal leads me to believe human life is equal to marine life. Indeed, scientists imagine best available science, and it will do. In Proposal 2XA, the minimum size and spacing rings true. Thank you.
On that poetic note, I'll turn it back to you, Scott. Rare.
Thank you very much to all the members of the public for contributing your comments this morning. We're going to now shift back to our work team room. So again, this section here is Group 1-3. Next door is Proposal 2, and in the steamy boardroom, it's Proposal 4. We will be closing the air wall again. So grab your stuff, and everyone, let's shift right now.
But before you do, if you did not receive last night, if you're on the RSG, if you did not receive the packet of public comments, or if you did not receive the packet of feedback from your colleagues, raise your hand, and staff will bring you a packet.
And to the public, we wanted to make sure people that put documents in the record yesterday that we didn't, although they will be posted on the web, we reproduced them so all members of the stakeholder group would have them in hand today before deliberation.
Good. Thank you. And these are documents for the RSG. Thanks very much. So we're gonna close up the wall here, so we'll take a little 5-minute break to reorganize ourselves, and then we'll be in work team mode. Good afternoon. We'd like to, first of all, commend all the work teams for their hard work in producing final draft proposals. It was a huge amount of effort. I couldn't, of course, observe groups 2 and 4, but 1-3 had at least 17 people in it. We worked very hard, and we did arrive at, we think, a very solid proposal. That's not an endorsement, but it's just recognition of the hard work. So what we want to do is a similar process that we used yesterday. We want to look at the three proposals side by side, and we want to ask the presenters to address two questions. One is, very briefly, what process did you use over the last day as you did your work? And secondly, what are the major changes between yesterday and today? So you saw an overview of these earlier draft proposals yesterday. What's different today? The I-team is working on calculation of total area in MPAs for each proposal. They should have that fairly soon. And then they're also doing a second set of calculations, and you'll be able to see, we hope, calculation by MPA type across each of the proposals. That one is going to take a little longer to do, but that's in process now. So we want to switch sides of the room, and we're going to ask Ben to go first, if you don't mind. Oh, no. It's not Ben? Who's for? Four. Sorry. I'm going to ask the presenters from Proposal 4 to go first, then we'll go to Proposal 2, and then 1-3. So who is the presenter for Proposal 4? Okay, so as we did yesterday, we'll go from north to south. We'll have all three maps in a side-by-side fashion. I want you up here.
Actually, Scott, Karen
yes.
is starting actually with an overview of the proposal. She's not
that's
starting
fine.
With a specific geography. She's providing an overview.
No, that's
should begin.
That, as they all will. So that's great.
All yours. Yeah, if there are two of us, Fred is going to do the other half. So there's been a lot of bad news lately, and there's not a lot that we can do about the crisis of confidence in the economy or the bad salmon returns. But there is something that we can influence, and that is the recommendation for a network that leaves a legacy for our kids of healthier oceans and protected ocean places. Obviously, we don't have total control over that, but we can do our best to recommend a good network. Our group was motivated by that desire and also by the desire to do a superior... Happy birthday, Darcy. Another thing... Speech. Another thing we have control over, birthday wishes for Darcy. So we wanted to leave a legacy, and we also wanted to make sure that we did a superior job of meeting the goals and guidelines, create an enforceable network, and we tried to increase the common ground between our proposals and other packages. So some of the strengths of our proposal, we have a backbone of four preferred size, highly protected areas. We have other marine reserves. We encompass high quality habitat, as well as leaving a lot of it open. And we think that we have done a good job meeting the representative habitat requirements and the size and spacing guidelines. But we aim to create those long-term benefits while also minimizing our impacts on for socioeconomics and on humans. So we studied the socioeconomic data carefully, and we consulted a lot of people. We had some folks come into our room helping us, as the rest of you did too. The result is a compromise, but it does leave a lot of popular fishing spots open, and we shaved away at in many cases, both ends of our areas and rearranged them to reduce impacts further than the last version you saw. So we have a compromise, but it reflects the public interest in greater protection for the oceans. We also made a particular effort to pay attention to adaptive management in our design and learning as we go and research study opportunities. So those are some of the things we've incorporated, and Fred is going to talk you quickly through the specific sites and talk about the changes we just made.
Okay, so we actually made a lot of changes in the last 2 days, and it's been really, really interesting.
Fred?
Yes.
Can we just focus to start on the Point Arena and Saunders Reef?
Works for me.
Good, thank you.
So this looks very similar to what it might have been before, but what we initially did was we moved in this boundary, and originally it was on the edge of the Guadalupe River. We brought it in a little bit to really open up some other key crabbing grounds while still maintaining a lot of key rocky reef habitat within the reserve. As far as Sea Lion Cove, we had some really interesting discussions there because of, for one thing, just how to enforce something like that, but also what types of activities were allowed. If you might remember, we originally had a reserve there, and we felt like that might be overly restricted, but we also had some issues with the boundary lines as well. And so we actually brought it out to the whole minute line and brought it around, but we focused on restricting invertebrate harvest, which we felt like we wanted to open up more general recreational opportunities such as fishing, shore-based fishing and boat fishing in that area. And as far as the outside SMCA, we maintained our original purpose, which was to provide allow salmon, but you know, to provide a high level of protection out to the 3 mile line. At Saunders,
so we're going to do the northern study subregion first, and this completes it, and then we'll hear from the other two groups.
Oh, okay. Is that that's
no,
the way you want to do it?
He is doing it now. Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so with Saunders Reef, what we've always allowed here in this case is urchin and salmon trolling, and this was and the key was protect a lot of this sort of key rocky complex, but also a lot of the there's some really really great kelp habitat in there as well. One thing we did due to Tracy and some of the other people who had spoken on this occasion was we moved this line up. I think it's about at the half point. Up to the minute line in order to open up to lessen the impacts there and open up some of that area from the south as well for the Anchor Bay folks.
Yeah, Aaron.
Can you clarify the no take in the SMCA below arena? I missed it.
In this one, in Sea Lion Cove. It's just no invertebrates, so it would allow shore-based fishing and all hook and line.
And that concludes the revisions from the northernmost subregion. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Good. So,
are we talking about this one as well, or
not yet?
Okay.
Not yet. So, what we want to do now is invite the presenters from Proposal 2. To give, again, a brief overview of what you've done over the last day, your process of revision, and then just some very quick notes on highlights of revision and then the top study region.
At Point Arena, nothing ended up changing, although we started the day exploring the possibility of moving the boundary between the SMR and SMCA into 123.45 and a half. Ran the habitat model on it, and the conclusion was.
Chad, can you?
The conclusion was that it would be knocked down in its level of protection, so we've kept it as it is, and I guess that's it in that study region.
Ben, do you have any sort of global comments on your process of how you assimilated comments and how your group worked over the last day? If you don't, that's fine.
I wasn't prepared for to repeat my
that's
opening
fine.
Statement from yesterday.
It's fine.
But I could.
No, it's
sure.
It was so compelling, I think we all remember.
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you. All right.
All right. Okay.
So now we're going to hear from a new presenter. We have a tag team of presenters from Proposal 1-3.
Cicely.
Samantha and Phil.
All right. Bill, Bob, Richard. So I would like to take a minute just to talk about our process. I think, you know, we had a chance to look at the written comments. We heard the feedback. I got a chance to see everyone else's proposals yesterday. And we kind of just went back, especially to this subregion, last night and spent, you know, until like 10 o'clock here, mostly talking about this subregion. Overall, I do want to take just 2 seconds. I know we're behind, but I'll make it quick. You know, this group in particular, given that we were trying to work with a cross-interest group, we've basically been working since 5 o'clock on Monday, and by my tally, that's, you know, 68 or so hours. And because I assume that no, but I mean, we all thought about it while we slept, right? And I don't know. I mean, it was not easy. People walked out. People came back. We had a lot of votes, a lot of abstentions from votes, and it wasn't, I mean, it was difficult. It was really difficult. And I just want to kind of acknowledge that because, I mean, I would expect nothing else from a group that had, you know, kayak fishermen, abalone divers, conservationists, docents, commercial fishermen, party boat guys. I mean, I would expect nothing else, but I just wanted to acknowledge that because it has been a really, really draining and a hard process for everyone. But I hope that at the end of the day, I think we came up with something that truly is a middle proposal. By my count, we have 5 preferred size clusters that range in protection level from very high all the way down to moderate. But I mean, I think we did a good job, and I hope that the people that sat in this room and spent the last 60 hours working on it, 68 hours working on it, I hope that we feel like it's something, I mean, everyone's bruised, but like something that we can all live with. And on that, I'll hand the mic to Phil to talk about Point Arena.
Thank you, Samantha. Okay, in Point Arena, I don't know, this western boundary has moved in and out more times than a ping pong match or something, but in the end, we voted to bring it back out to the 146 or 123.46 line there, and in doing so, we also moved this eastern boundary with it. We had Sea Lion Cove in at one point, and we booted it out to keep some economic viability to tourism there. The SMCA allows salmon trolling, and we were very cognizant to keep the Arena Rock, which is up in sort of the middle part of the top part of this region, well within the reserve. I think that's it for that particular one. We can go to Saunders then, unless there's questions.
So what's our screen on the left doing here? A calculation. Okay.
Go ahead, Phil.
I'm sorry.
That's a good
okay,
thing.
At
okay.
One of the trade-offs for moving that line back out to the 146, 123.46, at Point Arena was that we would try to make less of an impact here at Saunders Reef. So we opened up more area by moving this southern boundary to the north and to allow rockfish fishing around the Sail Rock and what we call Triggerfish Reef. This SMCA allows salmon trolling, abalone diving, sea urchin fishing, commercial sea urchin fishing, and shore-based rock fishing. And in the at one point we had had a delineating line splitting this Department of Fish and Game and feasibility was not that into that line, and we recognized that nobody would be in here fishing for salmon, and nobody is going to be out here diving for abalone or sea urchin, so we kicked the line out. And I think that's it for that region.
Great, thanks very much. So let's return back to Proposal 4.
So let's move south.
Yes, go to the black.
Yes, please, move south. And do remember, if you can, to touch on your treatment of Del Mar.
Right. Well, Del Mar, we didn't change. We kept it as a reserve, as originally indicated. There seemed to be really sort of strong, broad-based support for keeping, we didn't make any changes from the way we had originally dealt with it.
Okay.
The original one, which we found interestingly, if you look at the lines of trees, actually maybe how they came up with the angle in the first place. Nonetheless, this is a lot easier to enforce. I think that's the same as we've had it for some time now.
Okay, thanks.
Throughout this process, I mean, we. By the way, thanks for all of your comments that you wrote yesterday. We actually took a number of those to heart, and we tried to incorporate a number of those considerations into it. In this case, we shrunk it on both ends a little bit. We originally had this line down to Salt Point. We moved that up to Stump Beach. We also originally had this actually encompassed the southern Sea Branch public access trails, and we brought that down from the north as well to improve the recreational opportunities from the south and the north a little bit. And then we just sort of moved the state park boundary up that extra little bit right there to encompass that, to make that sort of a great sort of recreational area. So those were the sort of key changes we made at that point. But we really, really felt it was important, as we've always felt, to have a really strong reserve, sort of north preferred size reserve in this area.
Thanks, Fred.
Oh, also, just quickly, by moving this up to the north, we actually opened up that abalone index site. And so now I don't think we have any abalone index sites that are closed out.
Okay, you can hear it. We'll hear about that in public comment.
Sorry.
So let's continue. Ben, you're up.
I guess. Yeah, you got to zoom out.
Sorry, there are still ones that are closed, but we opened this one up specifically to keep that open.
Okay. Just did it.
Okay, so this area remained relatively stable. One thing we were able to do is we met with Arch Richardson, who's been a couple meetings now, and we talked with him last night about the access there at Stewart's Point, and he had some great high-res photography for us and really kind of explained some nuances. And the result of where we ended up having the line would have meant, you know, 1 minute he was in the reserve, then he'd be out, and then when he'd try to get to another rock, he'd be in it or partially in it, depending if it was his right foot in the water or what. But so all we did was an easy change. We just bumped the southern line up like a tenth of a minute. It freed up a little boat launch there, and just kind of a confusion thing more than anything. This is still in the high level of protection and the preferred size.
Good.
And then
you.
I guess that's the end of the study region. We left Gerstle Cove.
Gerstle is unchanged.
Took out Del Mar. Yes.
Good.
No.
So what was it, the disposition on Salt Point in your proposal?
The existing Salt Point, God, I'm spaced out. I thought that was a different study area. The existing Salt Point is out.
Okay.
Gerstle Cove remained.
Thank you. Good. Moving on. Samantha.
Yes. All right, so this is different from what we showed yesterday, too. I think most of our shapes are, actually. We brought this down another minute to the even 40 in an effort to still have a preferred size reserve while taking into in some really nice habitat, while taking into account some of the Richardson Ranch concerns that we definitely hear about. To be fair, I should say that we spent hours on this talking about it last night. Hours and hours and hours. This is what kept us here until 10 o'clock. It ended up being a split vote. This shape won 10 votes to the other shape we had was 9 votes. Both, I mean, they weren't that far off. A lot of it seemed to revolve around Horseshoe Cove and this general area. And it's probably worth noting that parks didn't get what they wanted, which was, you know, more reserve in the park boundaries, and they also wanted a state marine park that would be sort of down here. So just worth noting, but we still got a preferred size reserve in some nice habitat, and I think that Gristle Cove remains as is. If we want to, we took out the Salt Point State Park, as you can see, no longer exists. Del Mar, if you want to zoom on that, I can show us Del Mar, what we did. Phil kind of revealed that he kind of got kicked out of there once or something, so that it's pretty enforceable the way it is because of those hedgerows that Fred was alluding to. So you can't see them here, but there are two very clear hedgerows here. The existing Del Mar... Yeah, here they are. The existing Del Mar had kind of this corner lopped off, so we kind of squared it off just to make it simpler, but left it as recreational fishing, I think mostly is what it is, and just left it as is because people that are there seem to like it, so we respected that.
Oh, a clarifying question?
Actually, just reminded me, we did consider adding a park at Salt Point, but just couldn't reconcile the commercial versus recreational interests or the actual need. So just to let everybody know.
Considered it, but concluded otherwise. Yeah. Okay, thanks. Fred?
I actually was planning on asking the same question of Group 1-3. Similar answer? Group 1-3 didn't come up with a state park at Salt Point.
So I'd say that the short answer is that the way we voted on it, we voted on a, you know, basically a slightly different shape that also had the reserve going farther down and the park tacked onto it. So it was kind of that against this. So that's kind of how we didn't vote on a version of this that also had a park because feasibility-wise, it was kind of funky. It didn't really work. So that's kind of how we ended up losing the park in this.
Yes, it were.
Karen?
Another question?
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify Karen? The allowed uses at Del Mar. Does that mean spearfishing is allowed?
Yes.
Okay.
Existing uses.
Existing.
And what's the purpose of that park?
Or heritage.
Fred, if I can ask you in this round to talk about Russian River, Bodega, and the Esteros.
Okay.
Well, first with Russian River, we figured originally, if you remember, we actually had a reserve in this existing blue area here, and then we opened it up to... We basically decided to sort of make it a bit more flexible, and so we decided to allow crab and surf smelt by hand nets, and so we really focused it around. No, I mean, the key real focus was, you know, the key focus from the beginning, as you all know, is to try and protect the salmon that are schooling in the area. We had some concerns about other forms of hook-a-line fishing and how that might relate to incidental take of salmon. But so that's where we stuck with that. And then the actual Russian River area itself we kept as a reserve. And then we also, it doesn't show here, but we actually put 300-foot closure areas around these two islands here, in particular because it's one of the few areas that exists in our study region that has a high focus for Brandt's cormorant.
Thank you.
So I'm moving south from there. Okay, Bodega, I have to say, we wrestled with shapes. We spent a lot of time in the last number of days. Actually, if you're going back to March 4th and before, reconfiguring Bodega, and we spent a lot of time trying to deal with, mainly at first trying to deal with, trying to address fishermen's concerns, trying to figure out fish and game enforceability issues, and made a whole bunch of different shapes in a bunch of different areas. But we really sort of originally ended up coming back to something that was close to our original. We had originally actually had the reserve out to here. So a whole, so another, I can't even talk anymore. we originally had the reserve out to here and then a boot coming around here. There were some, you know, some salmon tacking issues for trolling. We also kept this line going out towards, between the point to the buoy to open up a little bit of this area here as well. So out here we allow salmon and crab, this reserve, and then continuing south. Oh, and then we also protected Estros, Americano, and San Antonio as reserves.
Exactly.
Questions?
Susan, did you have a comment you wanted to make?
Jay? Susan?
So these are going to go forward as proposals for SMRs and recognizing that there is duck hunting and letting the commission make the decision about how they want to handle it. And that's how it was done in the, actually was done in the case in the Central Coast, and the commission redefined it as a SMRMA, so State Marine Recreational Management Area. So that's what they've decided to do, is go forward as an SMR.
We felt like we were sort of stuck in this catch-22, whereby which on the one hand we were told that, you know, can't regulate duck hunting, but on the other hand, if you automatically call it a SMRMA, that means you're automatically enshrining duck hunting, and so we thought that was a weird catch-22, and so we really figured we wanted to stick to the really what our goals are here, to focus on, you know, direct marine species, leave the whole duck thing up to fishing game to decide, but we really, really felt those were important as reserves.
Jay?
That's exactly what I was going to say about the duck hunting, so what Susan brought up.
Yeah, we wrestled with it too in 1-3. Okay. Pass the mic. Or Ben, you're next.
Nothing changed to Bodega.
About the Russian River?
The Russian River estuary changed to a SMRMA. We figured we'd save the commission a few minutes. Just kidding. In the SMCA, it's salmon only. I mean, no take of salmon.
I'm
tired. Yeah, it's just no take of salmon. Including coho and steelhead, for those of you. South to Bodega, we're very, very happy with the outcome of Bodega. Nothing changed in the Esteros either. Are we doing Tamales Bay here or no?
No. Pass the baton, Samantha.
All right, so we want to go to the Russian.
Wait, I guess Susan has a comment.
Oh, yeah, and we were informed today that there actually is a little bit of duck hunting that occurs in the Russian River by boat. And that's something, not that many people do it, but there's a few people that do it. So, yes. So that's another area that issue
the could
SMRMA come
up. Issue.
Yeah.
I see.
That SMRMA issue.
Clever. So our Russian River changed slightly. I think it was just something we caught and revisited today. We might have to tweak it given this new SMRMA information. But we have, so this is a reserve inside. Last night it showed up as blue as an SMCA. That was not, I don't think that was our intent. So this is a reserve. It's the same shape as 2X. And then out here,
On the outside, we have recreational and commercial crab and smelt. That actually came from within our group. Yeah, because Tom Beatty pointed out that there are some night smelt fishermen, and we thought day smelt was okay, too. All right, so moving on to Bodega, this shape changed as well. I think almost every shape changed since last night, so we really did consider a lot of feedback. So this shape started out kind of looking like 2XA, only the northern boundary of the reserve was up a minute to get some of that high relief rocky habitat. And then we had this kind of funky idea to go from the lighthouse through the whistle buoy diagonal to the state line. And I think we had almost a unanimous vote in favor of this. It was really widely supported, and that was nice. And the rationale was, you know, to just make it even easier for the mosquito fleet coming out, just to make it as easy on them as possible. It's still a preferred size cluster. It's crab and salmon in here, so it's moderate high protection, but a preferred size cluster that makes it even easier on Bodega. So we thought, and just really widely supported, so that was a good outcome.
Good. Any clarifying questions on the last piece? Asteros.
The asteros are green now, and so I guess that means they're smirmas, and I can't remember why.
We don't know why they're green.
They were orange, and it was very difficult to discern between the orange and the red, so I changed.
Great. All right, so it's not for St. Patrick's Day or anything. It's they should they're unchanged. They're reserves. So.
No,
you guys voted on smirmas.
Okay, so they are smirmas. Because of the duck hunting in the, Mister. Okay, all right. I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. As we move to the next cluster of MPAs, if I could ask the GIS staff to show from Tamales Bay in the south to through Duxbury, please, and to show all the MPAs in that cluster.
Yeah, can we hold on a second? I'm noticing there's a lot of confusion on that. That's something that I think 1-3 is probably going to need to resolve. Use the microphone. So that sounds like an outstanding issue that 1-3 needs to resolve. Okay. I'm referring to after this these presentations,
yeah,
not at this moment.
Was not wanting to intervene.
I'm putting
in your
it on the parking lot for,
thank
but
you,
it's something
you.
That can be resolved later on
thank
today.
Thank you, Susan. Good clarification. Okay, let's continue.
Right.
So I guess we have all this here. So we originally, out at Tamales Bay, we had originally had all the way out to Millerton Point, and we decided that, the key thing we were trying to sort of work with here was sort of trying to protect the key sort of wetlands themselves. This is the existing boundary of the State Marine Park that exists right now. And so we felt we just wanted to sort of enshrine that as being a state marine reserve while still allowing. We had heard some comments about potential for, although the fishery isn't really strong right now, for exotic striped bass actually north of that line, and thought that maybe that was something worthwhile, especially considering it's an exotic species. So we brought that line down as far as the reserve. I think we are all very familiar with this shape. I don't know if anyone else has changed it, but this pretty much is this similar to the way it was before. Leaving this point open, for some of the Blinas guys for halibut, but otherwise sort of sticking with the same sort of format that we had before. As far as Double Point and Duxbury is concerned, and I don't know if you can go down a little bit further so we can... Can you pull it a little bit? Oh, thank you. Just to give you an idea of where we started today and where we ended up. Originally, we had a reserve actually down, or sorry, had Duxbury SMCA down to this line, and then we had the reserve from about this line up to here. And we talked with Jeremy, amongst others, from the Bolinas Fleet and a number of other people, And I talked with Josh the other day about this, and we were trying to figure out a way to sort of create a balance that really protected the key resources here, but nonetheless sort of allowed a little bit more flexibility. And so we moved the double point, state marine reserve line up to just south at the half, basically at the half minute line, just south of double point, which opened up some key halibut areas along right in there. And then we also brought this line up a whole minute and this line up a minute in order to, after discussions with Josh, I learned a bit more about how this part of the reef was really, really the really most highly productive part of the reef, and so really allowing a balance between uses there. Then we sort of had a discussion about double point, and there's a lot of really, really great, I mean, not a lot, but there's some great kelp habitat in here, and also we have some key bird and seal populations within this area, and not to mention from discussions learned more that there is a lot of juvenile rockfish within this area as well. And so maybe with that, with the retention zone and everything else, it sort of created a great individual type state marine reserve. We also put a 300-foot closure area around Stormy Stack. And I think that's it. Was there anything else? So, oh, right. And we added in the existing piece that, because we moved this up, we lost the piece of the original invertebrate closure that existed there. And so we decided to keep that little piece in along the intertidal zone.
Good. Is that it for that subregion then? Great. Thanks very much. Ben?
No changes to point rays. Drakes, I think we made the change yesterday, but we got it officially digitized, so we have that break, SMCA and SMR in there. And we, I don't know if we showed this yesterday or not, but the existing Duxbury or Bolinas Point SMCA was converted to a park, so it allowed the existing recreational take, and this was basically a design to try to prevent any future commercial harvest of the mussel beds there. And before I forget, because I've forgotten about in about three study regions now, one global kind of change we made to the SMCAs was to get clarification on allowing pelagic fin fish as the official what's allowed from the Central Coast. So there's some that's the intent, is everything that qualifies as pelagic fin fish, and but we have targets for levels of protection that can't change.
So you're trying to clarify the regulatory language.
Correct.
Make sure it's simpler and okay.
Yeah. Someone else can explain.
I think that's what you meant, wasn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
Okay.
And Tomales we removed.
Susan?
Thanks. So regarding the issue of pelagic fin fish, one of the things that we did go around and talk to the groups, that if your intent is to achieve a specific level of protection for that MPA or cluster, and you're allowing for pelagic finfish rather than salmonids only, because you want, but there may be some of the species that are in the group of pelagic finfish that have not been discussed by the SAT for level of protection. If you note in your document that your intention is to achieve a particular level of protection and that you're willing to have certain species omitted from that, if it would alter your level of protection, then that can give the SAT evaluation team the flexibility to do that.
Bingo.
Thanks.
Oh, and we did add 300-foot special closures of point resistance and Stormy Stack.
Good. Thank you. Patty, do you have a clarifying question? That was it. Mary Gleason.
Just a quick question. I'm noticing in the Estero that your boundary between the reserve and the SMCA is different than in Proposal 4, and I believe 1-3. I'm just wondering why. Is there a reason? Or
no, we didn't have those shapes to look at, and I think we picked a line of latitude on a tenth of a minute. And
so it wasn't all that.
Our only main criteria was that it was below all the existing leases. And
Okay.
Right, Mary, I can concur with that on here. We basically actually we pulled up the lease line, and so we specifically put it south of there.
Good. Thanks. So proposal 1-3.
And I also just wanted to quickly add, I'm sorry,
right.
Just to everyone knows that the double Duxbury SMCA that allows salmon, crab, shore fishing for pelagic finfish, and halibut, commercial and recreational.
Good. Phil.
Thank you. Okay, well, I think I'm going to need some help from my group on this one because I had to leave the room several times while we were talking about this area. But I believe that we had spoken with Jeremy and we listened to some of the folks out of Bolinas and Josh being one of the members in our group and stuff, and we brought this back to allow for the halibut fishing that occurs in this area here. I believe we have salmon and crab allowed in the SMCA in this area here. Correct me if I'm wrong. We have, I'm not sure what we did here in this Drake's Estero area or why this is, I think there's clamming that goes on up in there. We do have a special closure here for the bird populations, some 70,000 nesting birds or something like that in there. But we did adjust this western boundary to allow for close navigation around the point because that's a nasty part of the ocean right there. Did I miss anything there? This is a 1,000-foot closure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
And
did we keep the it was the oyster, and we put in clam, recreational clam. Yeah, and then the thousand foot closure along the bluffs we cut off at one of the minute because of safety concerns going around the point because of rough weather for small boats and large boats. So,
good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Is there a question? Oh, Tom.
He was on a roll. I was just willing to.
Tom.
Yeah. A clarifying comment. We followed the lead of 2XA and dropped the northwestern line down a tenth of a degree, so that we made it that last little cove there solid with the rocks.
Good. Right. And then we have another special closure here at Point Resistance. There was a lot of contentious debate about how big it should be and whether it should be 1,000 feet or 200-300 foot closed areas. And in the end, I think we went with 500 feet. So it's yet to be determined whether we can get away with that.
Just to add, we actually consulted with Fish and Game Enforcement and Brian advised flexibility on that point as a way of solving our problem of two overlapping circles. It was a timely intervention, actually.
And it should be noted that there was a great desire on the part of the National Marine Sanctuary to have the 1,000-foot boundary there. At Double Point, we have an SMCA that allows salmon and crab, I believe only.
And halibut
fishing, of course. And there's no rockfish fishing commercially or recreationally in there. And we left this existing SMCA at the bottom end, the little tail there, as a heritage site. And somebody would have to help me. Rick would have to help tell me what that is allowing in there and what is not. We didn't change it. Okay. The special, didn't I go over this? The Stormy Stack. I missed a smoking Stormy Stack there. It's another 300-foot special closure for the birds there. And there is also some surfing interest there that they're going to have to find another place to anchor their boats. But But we, yeah. There'll be less shark attacks, probably. All right.
Mary Gleason, I think, has a point to weigh in here.
One addendum. You also removed the Tamales State Marine Park and didn't replace it with anything.
Thank you. We did that.
Ben.
Just a clarifying question. So in the Duxbury, the existing one, is there commercial harvest of mussels allowed?
I don't think so.
That's allowed in the existing one.
We know that this is a heavily used area by people fishing. We left a good portion of the reef open. We're hoping that there's the spillover effect will help the fishing.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, the regs you guys agreed on were just to allow shore fishing or whatever pelagic fin fish from shore, and then there were some special. You also denoted what else you needed to prohibit there, but it only allows.
Yeah, in the existing this little strip, it really was it's a change, but it really the purpose is for benthic inverts. That's why we wanted in there, and that's why we left it there, and so that's really what it's kind of designed to do. So, sorry.
No commercial or recreation fishing in there. No turbine snail taking and whatnot. No invertebrates.
Just a final clarification, there is recreational fin fishing. There are no inverts, recreational or commercial.
Is there more?
Good. All right.
So let's move to the next area, and here we'd like to, I guess it's mostly focused on Fitzgerald and any special closures thereabout.
So originally we started out with, if you might remember, we had an inside SMR the entire length from here, actually up past this point here. I think we were originally on this line here. And so we had a reserve going down the entire length, and we had an SMC on the outside. At the urge of... Well, for a number of reasons. One, looking at sort of fish and game, but also to really allow for more fishing opportunities, especially offshore from this, for the north area. First, we brought down this line to allow more opportunities from the point people off Point San Pedro and small boats and those folks, and then also decided to go with the stacking method, which provide great, better scientific study opportunities between the two different areas, but also... and also allowed for a reserve out to the 3-mile line here, but at the same time sort of allowed for more opportunities for salmon and crab in this area. And actually also...
Does it last?
Yeah, and wet fish as well, specifically, to allow you to squid fish there. And... We also kept the San Gregorio area to this. Oh, also, quickly, the Devil's Slide, Egg Rock, we went through a number of different sort of discussions about this, about what level of protection should go there. We thought about doing a 300 around the island itself, but then having a point-to-point to the south to cover some of the birds along the cliffside. But we decided if we did 1,000-foot right there off the island, it would actually encompass all of the cliff sides for all the birds along the edge right around it. And so we decided to go with 1,000-foot there. And then moving south, we at one point almost decided to turn this reserve into an SMCA allowing striped bass, because there was a big interest in that category. But due to our local shore-based fishing expert here, we decided that was a fishery that... at least around here, maybe needed some help, and so we decided to turn it back into a reserve. And Karen?
I would just say that I would probably express their rationale there as trying to avoid turning this into a fishery management area.
Right. Well, this happened to us on a number of occasions. One of the reasons we switched the Russian River area from just focusing on salmon, one of the reasons we focused on some of the other is we didn't want to get into a specific single species fisheries management situation, which was something we were all encouraged to stay away from. And we felt that was going to be a problem in this situation as well.
Questions, anyone? on to the next proposal.
So we actually spent quite a bit of time here, and the end result was, like what we discussed yesterday, we slid that SMR south just a little bit, still the same size, it just reduced the SMCA size by a small amount, and finally ended up, after a lot of model runs and habitat calculations and kicking Mike in the back a little bit, with snap to that even minute line. Otherwise, there's no change.
Yeah, so, Ben, I thought this could be a good time to just reiterate that Proposal 2 has, I think, three SMCAs that are in the moderate to high level of protection.
Yeah,
for strategic reasons, this is one of them here.
Correct, yeah. We have three clusters that end up in the moderate high, this and Bodega being the two designed for more design purposes, Point Reyes being the one designed specifically for socioeconomic considerations. This one, obviously, with socioeconomic considerations as well. Special closure here, 300-foot at Devil Slide.
Okay. Proposal 1-3.
Okay, this is another one that changed quite a bit over the last few meetings, at least. And we had struggled with flipping it and bringing it back to its original shape and whatnot. And in the end, we voted to have a state marine reserve right out of the harbor to protect this reef in here that has quite a bit of diversity of habitat and diversity of species associated with it. The change we made was that we moved this line up a tick to put it on this even boundary, and we added halibut to the SMCA, which is allowing wet fish, crab, salmon, and squid. I don't know what else I can...
Special closure.
And there's a special closure around Egg Rock. It's a 1,000-foot circular closure around the rock to protect the birds species that exist in high numbers there, apparently.
Good. Thanks, Phil.
Yes. Samantha wants me to point out that it is the preferred size SMCA and SMR cluster with the moderate high protection. Moderate protection. I tried to throw that in there, but you can't.
Okay. Let's see if that works. Okay. Good. Any clarifying questions on this subregion? If not, let's move to the Farallons.
I think most of the Farallons proposals look relatively similar from the discussions that seem to be going back and forth between the different groups. Bless you. And so I think the key different, I think the real key difference is, and I'm actually going to tack off of this one over here, actually, because, the key factors is we put a 1,000-foot closure around the northernmost island, and then we put 300-foot around the islands just to the south. But then when we get to the southeast island, we had the same concern as everybody else, which was the concern about safe anchor with regards to, you know, storms and really heavy seas. And so we don't have it up on ours yet, but if one of the others shows a good close-up of it, I don't know if 1-3 has a good close-up. So we had the same thing for the northern islands, which is they show right here. But then if you could go to the southeast island... We'd seen what 1-3 was doing. We didn't have time to get it up on our maps, but we wanted to accomplish the same goal, which was to leave the two key safe harbors open while still providing those key protections for the murrelets and for all the other birds and sea mammals that use this area. And so that's it for our Farallons. And I guess just in closing, I'd like to say that, you know, we really wanted to have a really strong conservation-based proposal, but we really did our best to listen to as many people's points of view as possible and try and incorporate different ideas into different places. And we thank all of you who really provided us with that kind of input. And also a lot of thanks to Jared and Darcy and Melissa and Susan and everyone else who really helped us work to get this proposal where it is.
Thanks, Fred. One last clarifying question. You have nothing at Pescadero, is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. And we forgot to touch on that in all of the proposals. Thank you. And Samantha, if you can address that question as well before you do the fair allowance, that would be good.
Sure, but I think Ben is next. No?
Yep.
Yes.
At Pescadero or San Gregorio?
At the Farallones?
The Farallones.
Farallones next. But the question
what did
is,
you just ask?
I just asked, we didn't actually discuss whether there was a special, any kind of MPA at Pescadero, and I wanted to make sure that each of the groups talked about that.
Right. Okay. But four did have one at San Gregorio.
Understood.
Okay. Sorry. So the islands, we actually removed the North Island completely. Just kidding.
Deadpan.
And so
Ben, you have to work your audience a little better than that.
Grenade. You know. So the Southeast Island, nothing changed in terms of the MPAs. The North Islands, we did a 300-foot special closure around all the islands. At the Southeast Island, you know, if we want to go into more detail, Tom Matouche is the guy here, but we looked at similar maps and made a couple of small modifications in the lee of the island, which basically would leave the lee of the island as a safe anchorage and get out of trouble spot. Probably need those boundaries up there. You don't have them up yet.
I know. So
Tom, I don't know, do you want to point it out, or do we feel it's necessary?
Ben, you might look at the right screen if that helps.
Yeah.
Tom, grab a mic.
Yeah. I'm blinded by the light. So the only thing for safe anchorage here and for bad weather, we just said we're going to allow anchoring. We can't just allow anchoring, so we just eliminated this little closure here, and we went with everything else. So this is all open for safe water, safe anchorage.
Thanks, Tom.
Yep. And that's it.
That's it for Farallones. Thanks. Samantha and Phil, back to you.
Yeah, and I would just ask that you forgive Phil and I for what might seem like kind of a piece-together presentation, but we did make a lot of changes, and so sometimes it's hard to remember what we actually ended up with. But at Bean Hollow, we do have a special closure, and it's February through August, 300 feet, if we want to take a look at it. We had a vote on it. I actually wasn't in the room. But I'm looking around, and I don't think it was super contentious. I think that's nice. So it's a 300-foot February through August. It wasn't nice. mixed reviews. Dave.
It wasn't that yellow. It's fine.
Uh-uh. No. It was a 300-foot February through August. It was it a circle?
No. No, it's linear.
Okay. Anyway. Unclear. Yeah.
No. Bob, do you want to clarify what that was?
Well, we just... Well, it keeps it stuff from that. What to there? There up.
Wait, what's the northern boundary?
The parking Same? Lot. At the which is actually it's the South Pescadero parking lot. That's the northern boundary. The southern boundary is this little. It's right where the parking lot is, so it leaves open the beach and the intertidal area there. So it starts right. There's a point right there, so we'll go right to that point, that way up.
And then the Farallones, Phil.
Yes.
Well, the Farallone Islands. I don't think we changed anything with the SMRs or the SMCA. We did add special closures at the North Farallone Islands. That was 1,000 feet around the North Farallone Islands and two 300-foot special closures around the St. James Islands. The Southeast Farallone Islands are complex with different degrees of protection there. I think maybe
Irina would be better off, or somebody would be better off clarifying exactly what we did there. But basically, there's 300-foot closures in most areas, with no closed area in an anchorage there at Fisherman's Bay, and another no closure area at the southeast side of the island there. We had a rather contentious vote about the area in between, and the I believe that one turned out to be 300, or was it 1,000?
It's all 300.
It's all 300. That makes it easy.
No.
Except for the North Island, where there's a 1,000-foot closure for the stellar sea lions.
I don't know what they are.
And I think that's it. And happy birthday, Darcy.
Happy birthday, Darcy. So great job, everyone. It sounds, Mary, like we need a few minutes from the 1-3 team to just wrap up a couple of these loose ends. Is that right?
Yeah, I have a short list of things I need to say. That's all right?
Yes.
Okay.
Pay attention to Teacher Mary.
Sorry.
Please.
So the first thing is that I did get one comment from a SAT member who's here today, Karina Nielsen, and she was just pointing out that it seemed like some of the proposed regulations in especially the intertidal sites, but things like Duxbury, Point Arena area, that, you know, it's not clear sort of what the intent of the protection is, and if, you know, are you just focusing on invertebrates, or are you focusing on invertebrates, algae, and the whole community? And so I think everyone could just review their proposed regulations and, you know, make sure their intent is very clear with regard to commercial recreational take of all of those kinds of organisms. So that's just a comment.
And that applies to all three
proposals,
right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And there was a bit of inconsistency in how they were worded. So just kind of review those again. And it kind of brings up the issue of I think each proposal group probably needs just a couple minutes to do a little bit of that kind of cleanup. I know the proposal group 1-3, we had the issue about the Estero SMRMAs. We need to sort of revisit that quickly. And then the Bean Hollow special closure boundary and that sort of thing. So I would just propose that we have, you know, a 10 or 15 minute block at some point to do that kind of cleanup. And then the last thing I would just like to say is that the staff have put together the area calculations for the three proposals. If you all want to see those now, we can project those.
Yeah, let's do that now if it's available.
It's available. And so again, these were hastily done, but I think accurate. We've been doing a little double-checking. But essentially, so proposal 1-3 is on the left, proposal 2XA in the middle, proposal 4 on the right, and I'll just read you the numbers. Proposal 1-3 has 21.9% of the study region in MPAs, and of that, 11.5% are in reserves, 10.4% in conservation areas, and less than 0.1% in park, and less than 0.1% in SMRMAs. Proposal 2XA has 18.05% of the region in MPAs, and in the region, 8.87% are in reserves, 9.05% in conservation areas, 0.09% or so, less than 1% in parks, and 0.05% in SMRMAs. Proposal 4 has 26.9% of the region in MPAs, and that includes 15.4% in reserves, 11.1% in conservation areas, and 0.3% in parks. So just again, the overall totals for Proposal 1-3, it was 21.9% or essentially 22%. Proposal 2XA is 18%, and Proposal 4 is 26.9% or essentially 27%.
Good. Thanks. So I think the thought is to take a break and reconvene, and we'll talk about briefing the Blue Ribbon Task Force on the findings, and as Mary said, we need to leave aside a little block of time for cleanup on these last couple of items. So let's take a break. Thank you all very much for your presentations, and we'll come back in about 10 minutes.
If we could ask members of War Team 1-3 to gather over on this end, to gather over here to be able to tidy up these last two areas. So, again, we'd like to ask all RSG members to take your seats. We'd like to jump into the next agenda item. Okay, thank you all for your hard work this morning. If I can have everyone's attention, please. I swear I'll start singing. Okay, I want to recap a couple of deliverables, and so there are a couple of follow-up next steps to the proposals you guys have developed, so listen to these carefully. Staff is intending to send the templates for each of the three proposals to the leads and indeed the entire work team, so each work team gets their own template by COB tomorrow. And we are asking for a check from each of the work teams. And we are asking for your checks by Sunday night. But there's actually an extra step in here. So we're going to send these to everybody on the work teams by tomorrow night. And we're asking that the work team members who have comments on them get their comments to their work team leads by, say, COB Friday, so that the leads have some time this weekend to compile and send them off. Or the leads can set up that review period however they want. But so it's a two-step process. Everybody gets the templates, send your comments to your work team leads. Work team leads compile these, sends them to staff by Sunday night. So that's the first thing. Secondly, we are requesting that the narratives for each of the proposals be developed by the work team leads by Sunday night again. Third, there has been a request for maps, and we will endeavor to make all maps available by first thing Monday morning.
Eric, can I just add on the narratives? I mean, we're really just looking for a paragraph or two about who was involved in the proposal, what was the process you used to develop the proposal. No specifics, details on the MPAs, but really what was your approach, what were your objectives, your sort of overarching objectives?
Thanks,
like two paragraphs, half a page is plenty.
Okay, and finally, I want to confirm who the work team leads are who will be helping to shepherd the review of the templates. And so I'm pretty sure for 2XA it's Ben and Ed. Good. How about for proposal 4? Fred and Karen. And how about proposal 1-3? Rick, Samantha, you can have a third. Rick, Samantha, and okay. So I have Tom. Who are the other two? Okay. Rick, Samantha, and Tom. Thank you very much. Okay. So those are the near-term assignments to wrap all this stuff up, and this will allow staff to get the packages to the SAT soon for the beginning of their evaluation.
I have watched this process for the year that ago that Secretary Crisman talked me into a little excitement in my life. I started as a young staffer in 1972 in the California legislature. That was my first exposure to real public process, and since then done a lot of it. I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I am very proud to be part of this process, because as difficult as what we're doing, as important as what we're doing, this has been a really public, open process. Many of you sitting around this table or sitting in the audience did not think it was going to be, came with a lot of cynicism, but you got heard, you got excited, we laughed, we cried, we raised our voices, and the BRTF said, see if you can take this, all of this, 10 proposals, I think, as we started out, and 4 external proposals, and all this, and if you can get it down to 3, that'll be great success. Well, congratulations. You've done it. So a hand to everybody. I realize that all of you are very vested, as is your I-team staff, in this succeeding and being completed in a way that the term that we've used as your staff is, can we all live with this? Obviously, we have our preferences. Where can we converge? What information can we give the Blue Ribbon Task Force to help them make the best decision? But most importantly, reflect what happened here. Not only this weekend, but this week, but all these months that we've been working on this. So as your staff, we've, with the consultation of our facilitators, we've come up with a draft proposal of how we would like to inform the Blue Ribbon Task Force. And it's with, in a way, and this is a unanimous, you know how hard those are to get, unanimous vote of your I team, as that we're going to put this up, and I'll walk you through it. And this is our recommendation to how we think we can best inform the Blue Ribbon Task Force and give them some sense of what you are doing here, have done here. And of course, we are making our last meeting the first day of their meeting, so that you will be able to be there and hopefully share and in all of the different forms, these 3 very good proposals that qualify or within the guidelines. And as I know, Secretary Crisman said to me before we set foot here, I mean, we were trying to combine proposals, but that you are so far ahead of where we ever thought we'd be to have this many ideas that are in compliance and being worked on and being served up. So if you will, I can't really, do we have it small so I can see it even with my glasses? Okay. So, that was the other pair of glasses. I didn't bring the long-range ones, right? Okay. 3 MPA proposals have been developed by the MLPA North Central Coast Regional Stakeholder Group for submission to the MLPA Blue Ribbon Task Force, BRTF. To help the BRTF consider the final MPA proposals, we are asking each seat on the stakeholder group to provide 2 types of information for each proposal. A, how do you rank your preference of this proposal? B, could you live with this proposal as a recommendation to the BRTF? To maximize the usefulness of the information provided to the BRTF, we ask you to complete both columns of this table. And so you can see how we've listed the 3 proposals, and we say ranked order of preference, 1 most preferred, and 3 least preferred. Could you live with this as a recommendation to the BRTF? Yes or no? And asterisk, a response of yes does not require that you have worked on the proposal, nor does it necessarily mean that you completely support all the elements of the proposal. So this is our suggested way to best inform the BRTF, and I think there might be some robust discussion. So I'll turn it over to Scott and Eric.
Just a couple of points of context. We first of all recognize that there could be a difference between authorship and preference. We also think that there's value in providing the BRTF with the information of not only what is your first choice, but what's your take on the other proposals. So this is a tool that's designed to do that. At the same time, we don't want to force you into a second choice that you cannot live with. And so we give give you the option of stating, can you live with this proposal, yes or no? So the two columns, the two questions are very much intended to be balanced in the kinds of information we're asking from you and that we would like to be able to use to brief the RTF.
I have a couple more clarifications. For the first column, ranked order of preference, here we would ask you to have, you know, a 1, a 2, and a 3, not 3 1s or 3 3s, but a 1, a 2, and a 3. And then for the second column, you can indeed say, yes, you can live with more than one proposal to go to the BRTF.
Or you can live with only one. Karen?
Okay, the second vote, if you're really asking, my perception is that a lot of people think that it is a good idea to send three proposals forward. And I guess I'm wondering about whether that could be easily dealt with without even doing it.
Right, right.
Or,
you know what?
But there could be misinterpretations.
Right, right. This is a good point. So this is not meant to be an elimination vote. We are not voting. This is so ingrained in the I team, we didn't even say it explicitly. We are not voting any proposal off the island. This is not a secret plan to only send two proposals. Please be reassured. All three proposals are finished. They will all go to the Blue Ribbon Task Force. So I hope that responds to some of your concern.
Then why are we having that vote?
Because we want, it's not, the right column is a statement of can you, the individual RSG member, live with that proposal as a possible recommendation to the Blue Ribbon Task Force. We know what your first choice is, not you, but we know what a respondent's first choice would be from the left column, but could you in fact live with your second choice? And we're not assuming the answer is yes. That's what the second column is for.
Okay, so you can have three yeses in the second
column. You could have three yeses in the second column.
I'm not sure
and
what the...
Sadly, you could have three noes, but I don't know why you would have been here.
I would be happy to say right now that I support all three going forward.
That's not the question. The question is, can you live with it as a recommendation?
Oh,
that's a subtle distinction.
That's a clarification that I needed. Thank you.
Good. Thank you for asking the question. Ben. It's anonymous.
So I guess...
Thank you, Karen. Those are good questions.
I get the can you live with this recommendation, but I'm not sure I understand the first one and what that actually provides. And my concern is that, you know, if someone says they have a second, you know, mm-hmm. one, that's going to be, you know, construe something that may not in fact be there. And I don't know what we get from that. I also worry that when you do this 1-2-3 ranking that at the end it might kind of imply to other people that one might be dropped. You know, the one that finishes third, you know, and it's my concern of the perception of these votes. And
I think maybe I can't make commitments, but you can.
I think I can make a commitment. There's no proposal that's going to be dropped. The Blue Ribbon Task Force wants to see all three of these proposals, and as you heard from Chair Golding, she reserved the right to say we may move these around and do the best we can. She also sat here yesterday as we talked to you about bringing this up and how we thought we'd do it, saying that would be very useful information. And obviously the idea so you could not be feeling that you were supporting something you didn't want to support was why we did this in two parts. So that information will be reported out, that just because your second choice, it wasn't really your second choice if you can't live with it.
Right.
I mean, it's going to look a lot different as a vote, and
so,
it's reporting out.
So that's why have the first half?
So that's a great question. Melissa, what is the advantage of asking for people's second and third choice?
But that's my point. It may not be a choice.
I know.
No,
but
it's not. Assume, and I know this is a real stretch, but assume for a moment that I'm a task force member, and you tell me that your first choice is proposal 1-3. I can't live with 1-3 for whatever reason. I want to select one of the other two proposals, but I have no indication of other than can you or can you not live. And if you tell me you can live with all three, great. So 2XA, 4, which one do I choose? I have no indication of which of those two would be your preference if I had to select one of those?
But they might not be my preference.
But that's why the second column tells me if it may not be your preference, but the second column tells me whether you can live with that or not. If I'm not willing to select 1-3, I want to choose one of the other two. Can you live with either of those? And if you can live with both, that tells me whether or not
right,
it gives me an idea. And in the first column gives me an indication of if you had to live with one of those two, then which one would it be?
Right. So let's hear from some other people. Richard and Ed.
And Phil.
And Phil.
And Tom Beatty.
And Tom Beatty.
Your mic, Richard.
Don't beat yourself up, Tom. It's okay.
Don't run aground with it.
Yeah. Right.
My question is, we've all been straw voting for the last 2.5 days. Is there a utility to straw voting one more time in that, presumably, tell me if I'm wrong, this vote gets transmitted to the SAT and to the BRTF, and particularly the results of this.
Not to this SAT.
Okay, but to the BRTF. Question I'm raising
yes.
has to do more with the BRTF.
Yes.
They asked us for 3 proposals. We're providing a great bloodshed 3 proposals. Does that not skew their perception of each proposal to have a vote attached? I'm not worried about the second column. I can see how the second column mm-hmm. informs them. But it seems to me that we're creating a dynamic where the balance of different interests, many different interests on the RSG, starts to skew the perception of the BRTF, some of whom are former elected officials who place a great deal of weight in a vote, who would then say, oh, it's a popularity contest. But none of this was ever intended, in my view, or the view of many of us, to be a popularity contest. This was supposed to be evaluated by certain criteria, goals, and objectives. I'm wondering if we are jumping over the goals and objectives, and for the BRTF, only getting this limited information from us, presumably we'll all be able to go to the BRTF on the first day and advocate for whatever we believe in. The co-meeting on that day allows that. My
yes,
question is, do we want to skew and prejudice the BRTF before they even hear from us?
The idea was not to skew and prejudice. The idea was to get some sense of where you all were so you could start that discussion farther along. That's no skew and prejudice.
Well, I guess what I'm pointing out is this seems to me a possible unintended consequence would be to prejudice. If I were on the BRTF and I serve on a couple of panels, if I get something that comes in and it says these guys like this one best, yes, I'm going to be prejudiced from the first day I see that piece of paper.
Well, can I just add also, and this is not in direct response to that, but not only do we hope that you will be in attendance, but that is your last meeting. The 22nd of April is your formal last meeting as an RSG, and so we would very much hope that you're planning to be there.
Well, I'm flying back from Alaska to do that, where I'm working.
Thank you.
But the question is, would we not be better served by being able to simply speak for our proposals, or maybe multiplicity of proposals that we could support, directly to the BRTF without them seeing a piece of paper ahead of time that skews their perception of whatever we then may show up mm-hmm. and say?
Well, so let me respond, and obviously there are many views around this table. In the iTeam's view, this is responsive to what the BRTF would like to know. The direct quote from the chair was, this would be really useful information. Okay, we think this is not a replacement of testimony at all, but part of the story and would be useful information. That's our professional judgment, that we are being responsive as staff, and its 2 advantages are every seat gets to participate, number one. Number two, it creates a structure so the BRTF doesn't have to do its own calculus equation and integrate under the curve of all the testimony and sort of sort it out. They'll do that anyway, but this seems like a good supplemental piece of information.
And third, it's complemented by what they hear at the meeting by the individual RSG members. So they all go together in a packet.
Right. So others want to weigh in. Ed, Phil, and Tom.
Can I also ask that as people are providing their comments, that rather than just simply saying, you know, I would prefer not to do this, give us some ideas or suggestions instead of how you would instead provide that preference information to the task force so that they can be more informed.
Very good question, Melissa. Ed, Phil, and Tom.
Yep, I remember Ken the Blue Ribbon Task Force. They were requesting a strong cross-interest support. Are you developing this to inform the BRTF of strong interest support? Is that how it's going to be formulated when it's given to the...
No. In part. I mean, that's not the only purpose. I think, as we've said, there can be a difference or distinction between your individual authorship and your support for a proposal. And we think both authorship and support are useful information and frankly, things that the BRTF has been asking for, as you heard from the last meeting.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think this is the strong cross-interest support. That if I were a BRTF member and I were to get this particular information, I would definitely state that this. I would take it as this is indicating strong interest, strong cross-interest support.
Mm-hmm. Susan?
As always, I'm thinking on the fly, but one thing I'm thinking about that could provide an indication of what kind of cross-interest support there is for each one without adding up votes and reporting X number voted for this proposal, X, number for this one and that one, is that we can summarize this information in a way that would be useful and not do that. And one way I'm envisioning this is that, I'll just take them in order. For those members that indicated that Proposal 1-3 was their preferred alternative, if they had to choose something, if theirs wasn't selected, what percent would elect to go with 2XA and what percent would elect to go with Proposal 4 as their second choice? And that would just say, of the people, and it doesn't even indicate how many people went with that proposal. It just says of those, 40% decided they wanted one, would choose one, and 60% said the other. Or it's split 50-50. That's a really good indication of a lot of cross-interest support or tolerance.
Okay. Let's continue. Tom. Tom Beatty.
Yeah, calling out from the happy shipwreck of 1-3. And I was really happy to hear that you guys are going to give us a few days to come up with the final details. But some of the details for us, because we had such a hard push to come up with the shapes at the very end, some of those details are still very much up in the air. A number of us were talking about issues such as the possession of live bait and how that would affect all of our SMCAs. So we've got some, and we tried to work that out with the department. We didn't get any conclusive answers there. So I'm glad we have the time to work that out. Depending on how that works out, that could significantly change some of our support in terms of this vote. And so maybe one way of dealing with it is to not to have this vote this afternoon, to have it right at the beginning of the Blue Ribbon Task Force, and then it would give you guys time to address other people's issues that have been brought up, because I think there are a lot of very good ones as to why we might reconsider this format.
Interesting suggestion. Thanks. Ken?
Actually, my views are very similar to what he just said. Many of you know that I had hoped very much that we could come up with one proposal, not three proposals, and Ben told me on early that was kind of a dumb idea that could happen, and he was right, and I'm very wrong. But I have concern about the Blue Ribbon Task Force taking this and taking that. And I like Susan's idea. I like the idea, just given that there needs to be some finishing touches made before we actually make a vote, if we're going to make a vote. That's all I want to say.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks. Bob.
Well, I have a suggestion. We all represent constituencies, and I'm afraid that the vote, rather than represent the vote of how this group as a whole sees things, is actually a vote as to how well you balance your constituencies. So I would recommend that we not be anonymous, that we vote for our seat with our name, and that the people can then look and see the source of what the comments were, and I think it will allow them to do a better evaluation of what the numbers are.
Thank you, Bob. Dave.
I don't know how to say this, because I'm not going to say this to try to be a stand-up comedian, but the reaction I'm getting from around this table right now, is it proper to have a straw vote to see whether or not we want to participate in this project?
Well, you won't be surprised to know that's something that crossed our minds. It's not, and you're not being a comedian. It's definitely an option. Sean.
I'd just like to echo what Richard said, and I could possibly live with a compromise of something like what Tom was just talking about, but I think Susan's suggestion is just another way of getting to the same piece of paper, and it basically forces people to express preference for something they might never express preference for otherwise, and I think it skews the output.
Okay. Thank you. Irina. Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I really like Tom's idea. One of the things that also appeals to me is at that point we'll also have information back from the SAT. So when we're making these informed decisions, that will be helpful feedback to have.
Interesting. It's changing the sequence of the cycle. How radical would that be? Wow. Okay. I have Dave, Karen, Ben. Have I missed someone? Phil?
No. Francesca. Francesca and Henry.
Okay. Irina, Dave, Karen, Ben, Francesca, Phil, Henry. All right. Everyone's going to get a chance to weigh in.
Fred was up here. Yep.
So getting a lot of advice today. So we've talked to Irina. So Fred. Fred. Suddenly, yes.
I guess while I'm not, or we can drop the volume. I don't know how this all works, but excuse me for that. I think there's a couple. I like Tom's idea. I do have a little concern admittedly we're all pretty tired right now, and maybe making a vote right at this very moment might not be the best idea. But I also think that if the BRT really does want this type of guidance, then they don't necessarily want it the day before. And so maybe there's some interim period in between when we can do some sort of vote, if that's what ends up being the final decision. I actually think that, I hate to disagree with, or not disagree with, maybe counter what a lot of you are saying, but if I was a BRTF member, I actually would like to see this kind of information. I think, it's their job to not just weigh what the BRT, what the RSG members feel, but also lots of other considerations as well. I think that this would just be one tool to help them sort of see where the RSG is heading, but I think there's a lot of other things that they're going to take into account when they make these decisions.
Thanks, Fred. That was precisely our analysis and also our attempt to be responsive. So I have Karen, Ben, Francesca, and Phil. Karen.
Yeah, I agree with Richard and Sean also, and I guess one of my other concerns, in addition to what Bob mentioned about your constituency, who represents whom determining the vote, is that voting strategies could play a big role, and that depending on what you consider winning, if you think winning is getting your thing, that's what you vote one way, and if you think winning is having cross-interest support, being together on something, you might vote differently, and those things could collude in ways that could really skew the vote. So if I were doing this, I'm not sure I think this is the best thing to do, but if I'm trying to come up with an alternative suggestion, the only thing I can think of is possibly taking two votes in succession, because everybody's trying to guess what everybody else's voting strategy is going to be.
Well,
That's true, but we also, I mean, the question on the right, can you live with this recommendation? You should individually be able to answer that question, if not today, very soon for each of those proposals.
And that seems like the more answerable, the question that makes a little more sense to me.
Okay. Ben?
I guess I'm kind of torn on something Tom said about delaying the vote. In one way, we really need to see the complete package for 1 and 3. I mean, we've got lines on a map, but that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
templates,
so I'm,
regs,
I'm,
everything.
I mean, you know, we don't have specific MPA objectives, all that stuff underneath. So that's one side, and I can see how developing some of that in the short term might be beneficial, but outweighing that drastically is that between now and the BRTF meeting, you know what I would envision is politicking gone wild, and I don't want a part of it. I don't want to deal with it, and I want to stress that the BRTF is going to have tons of information. They're going to have the SAT analysis, the socioeconomic impact analysis across multiple fisheries. I mean, they're going to have all of us sitting there talking to them.
I hope they do.
This is not going to be, you know, this vote is surely not going to tip the scales one way or another. They're going to be, you know, swimming in information. And so the last point I'll leave you with on it is there's three proposals going forward.
Correct.
Some I think are better than others, as we all feel. But there's three going forward. And I think, I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I think everybody in the room might walk away with a smile, and that this, knowing that this process has been a success, I know at least I can, and don't sour that for me. And I think if you force this vote, you're going to do that. It's just my word of caution, okay?
Okay. Francesca.
I think my general observation is that probably some folks are gun shy from the last straw vote you guys pulled out of the hat. And I think we're all tired after a long process and long deliberations and a lot of work. And, you know, how much more of the 4-point Sheridan in San Rafael can we take?
Now there is a good question.
Francesca, you will be happy to know that we are not meeting here for the task force meeting next month.
Yes, all true. Okay. All right, Dave.
I heard a question after Melissa made that announcement.
It's still here in San Rafael, but it won't be at this hotel.
We needed more room.
We'll send you maps. Dave Schaub?
So, anyway, just to finish.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was thinking just, there was more.
Yeah,
but
no, my mic died.
Okay.
I don't know. I think that it makes sense to be able to sort of take, an afternoon, a day. But the pragmatic side of me thinks that, I don't know, call me crazy, but I think everyone in this room knows in general what they support and what they don't support. I think everybody recognizes that a lot of good work and good collaboration went into each of these proposals. And I think that it would be a good compass for whatever the BRTF is looking for to know that people can or can't live with certain things. And I, again, because we have your confidence of nobody is not going to make it, I think maybe, you know, we're all just acting a little bit paranoid, and I don't really see a problem with taking a vote, you know, tomorrow or after the dust settles.
Good. Thank you. Phil, and then Samantha, and Fred again. Phil.
I almost forgot what I was going to say. It's been so long since I put my hand up there. But
sorry
about
that.
This just seems like a vehicle to, you know, support another proposal, even though you worked on, a separate one. I don't see it as being all that scary. Maybe we should stop psychoanalyzing it and just do it. And then, you know, everybody basically knows where the other proposals are. We just heard the presentations. It's kind of fresh in our minds. I'm ready to vote on it.
Thanks, Phil. Samantha.
Actually, Dave got bumped in the queue, so I'd like to let him speak.
Can you use this one, Dave?
Check.
I just had 2 points. I think we should maybe delay the vote. I haven't been able to really synthesize, you know, the other two proposals. Mm-hmm. We saw them up there real quick, but we've made mistakes before in assuming what something said. So I think it might be good to have some time. And I also have a concern about that first column. I think that there's probably a good chance that you have the bookend proposals, and there's a good chance that the preferred by everybody is going to be at one end or the other, and the number one vote won't help anybody. That's cynical, but I think it's real.
Okay. Samantha, did you have a comment?
Yeah, it wasn't just that Dave had a comment.
Right, right.
although it's going to be wholly unhelpful, so... I actually feel like, okay, so talk about politicking. I think if we wait and take this vote in a few days, I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to, you know, talk about strategizing over the vote and everyone's going to be lobbying and making calls and, oh, no, you have to vote for this. And I don't want to do that. I really don't. So I think if we're going to vote, do it today or let's not. I mean, that's my gut, and maybe that's not how everyone else feels, but I don't want to spend the next few days like the last few days,
yeah.
You know, frankly.
That's not unhelpful. I think it's a good point. Melissa, Susan.
I'm just wondering if y'all have issues with the second column, that could you live with this? Because we have witnessed each and every group take the feedback that they've received and make changes. No one stopped and said, we're not making any changes. And so there is cross interest represented in each one. And, you know, different priorities may have carried the day in different areas and different proposals. So I'm wondering about that second column at minimum.
Second column standing on its own or just taking it out? What are you saying? Just
asking that question.
Just ask the second question.
I'm wondering how. Question. I'm not even judging the first one. Just trying to find where the discomfort is. If there's, could you live with this? You know, what if we had unanimous all three? Then there's a lot of flexibility for the BRTF.
Yeah, I was going to just add to your comment that in fact we heard a couple of people say I actually could live with all three. That's not really the question for me. So I'm wondering if maybe even the group could say, we can live with all three. Well, it may not be my preference, but we could live with all three going forward.
Okay, let's hear. More ideas are being put on the table. Let's hear from some more RSG members. Sean.
If I felt like I knew more about the intricacies of each and every one of these, I mean, I'm spent. And I totally agree with what Samantha was just saying. I'd like to either get it over with so I don't have to think about this retarded process ever again. But
until April 22nd.
No, I know that. You didn't say that latter part, but I did. But honestly, I just don't know enough about the intricacies of all of them. You know, we're supposed to be making informed decisions until we at least see them summarized and scored by the SAT and look at everybody's tables of what's allowed. Doing it right now is not, I don't think, the most responsible thing. I just think it's a big rush to do it. And, well, I mean, it's not really a hmm. I saw a kind of shaky, I saw shaky proposals from people, you know, like Phil, who's been in here for days, couldn't remember what we just finished. And it wasn't exactly like true. He gave the most exhaustive, detail-encrusted presentation of what we worked out, you know, and he was there. And they were all feeling that way. And I couldn't chime in to help him out because I couldn't remember either.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a level of burnout here,
Sean,
where if you're looking for, you know, is really an informed, intelligent vote, I just don't know that any of us are really capable without seeing how things get ranked and scored and compiled and detailed out to do it right now. But more than that, you know, I'd rather go with Samantha's recommendation of just not doing it. The information is there. The SAT will provide the final, you know, scientific analysis of how these all shake out. We're all going to show up to the Blue Ribbon meeting and express our preferences directly, which I think come out a lot more detailed and with more nuance and more meaning and more context than 1, 2, 3, yes, no.
Sure.
You know, and I just don't see a reason to jam it into that box. Okay. And I totally agree with what Ben said. You know, everyone sort of left when we thought we were done a few minutes ago. No, we're not done again. I would rather be done and let the Blue Ribbon Task Force do its job.
Okay, so I'm going to make a process suggestion in a minute.
I wanted to follow up with Sean, if I might.
Please.
On a process thing, I heard you say that you wanted to show up and you know let the BRTF know how you felt, and that's one thing we're going to have to manage with all the group. And is that something that we may then, after all this process cooks down, that the group comes in three groups basically, and you line up behind and speak for the proposal that you prefer most? Is that what you were thinking? Or when I hear you say, are you? Because I'm not sure I'm going to be able to turn to the BRTF and say we have to have this all debated again, but I'm going to be looking to say, can you unify behind, maybe when it's all said and done, what proposal you want to unify behind and pick at that point? Or are you saying you don't want to pick?
Let them do that.
Yeah. Okay, so here's my process suggestion.
You do your process. We're going through a line here.
Okay, so, all right. Let's. I'll put it on hold for a moment. Go ahead, Karen. What's your idea?
Okay, so I think we all at this point, or many of us, want a process that's going to bring us closer together, not drive us further apart. And the first vote to me suggests, as other people have said, a popularity contest, encourages people to vote for their own thing, and doesn't bring us closer together. The second vote could conceivably. So I think I'm comfortable with doing that, and I think if people do express comfort with 1-3, which is the middle, there does need to be a careful process of finishing up the details, and as Tom said, I just support that, and maybe another meeting of some sort would be necessary. No, okay, scratch that.
All right, okay.
So I'll just hold my suggestion to doing two, not one, and leave it at that.
That's helpful. Thank you, Henry.
First, I want to commend the I-team for coming and having a unanimous vote. Trust us, all of us know how hard that is, and we applaud you for your efforts. However, you can look at the three proposals and see that there's a cross interest in all of those, because all of us have borrowed from one another. There's a human tendency, if you're given a list, even when it's a list in order, to put one on top of the other. I think that we've all worked hard, and what we need to do is give our three proposals to the BRTF as equals without strategy or stratifying them. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. I sense a groundswell of support. Francesca.
I just wanted to give a universal heads up that the most outstanding question we have right now on a regulation question for 1-3, which is really the only outstanding thing. There's nothing else shaky there. It's a very stable, lucky 13 proposal that I have an email into the all-knowing John Ugarit, so we should hopefully have an answer soon. So just so everybody knows.
Yeah, there are not a lot of loose ends, but that's true. Thanks very much, Frencha. Fred.
I'm going to... sorry. This thing's really hard. Whoa, I'm just going to sit way back here. I guess I'm going to support two options, and I'm going to support the option of either just sending all the three in without a vote, or we vote now. Because I agree with Samantha's comment, we'll get into all these behind-the-scenes politicking, and I think I understand everyone's tired. I understand that we've all been going through a lot here. All of us are feeling really burned out, but at the same time, we've all been looking at these same maps now for how many months? we've all been trying out different options and arrays for how many months? I mean, I think we all have a general idea of what these different proposals look like and how they're set up, and I think just delaying the vote is just going to turn into a whole big politicking thing. I think we all have a general idea of what all these different shapes look like, how they tend to score, or we wouldn't have set them up this way in the first place. So much of what we discussed here is not just what the conservation benefit is or what the uses are, but also we've been discussing scoring, we've been discussing what the SAT says, we've been discussing what the BRTF says. If anyone's an expert on these proposals already, we are. Okay. And I would just reiterate that I think let's just have a vote now or put them all in together equally.
So
I don't want to get into politicking 2 weeks from now. I think we all have lots of other things going on in our lives, and yeah, let's just vote or just push all three forward.
So I have a hybrid proposal to make, which draws from Henry and Fred and Karen and Samantha and Ben, which is I want to do a straw vote on the following. Your willingness to take a straw vote on the second column only today.
It's okay. Actually the third column over there, but it's the one that
the
says,
third column.
Could you live with or not a recommendation?
That one only. Could you live with taking a straw vote on the second column today before we leave? Yes or no? Could you live with taking a straw vote on the right-hand column only today?
Hands up, high, please. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 18, 19, 20,
okay. Very good.
Let's count no's just so
no's and abstain.
No.
Okay, Susan, you go ahead and ask for the no's and the abstains. All right, so we will do...
Raise your hand for a no.
Okay.
Thank you, too.
Okay, so we will compose a straw ballot now on the right-hand column only. There will not be a ranked vote before the BRTF. I do think the BRTF is going to ask us why we didn't do this, and they will ask you what you prefer. We'll see. All right, so we'll take a break, and we'll prepare the right-hand column straw vote only right now.
And during this intervening period, I would like to ask the primaries and their alternates here to confer.
There's what are we waiting for? We have those printed.
Oh, just fill out the second column.
Just fill out the second column.
Oh, that's printed. Okay, ignore the first column. Ah, I didn't realize they were printed. I'm sorry, Melissa.
Okay, So the plan is we are going to hand out a single ballot, straw ballot, to each seat. And so we need to ask all the primaries who are in attendance to raise their hands. And if someone's primary is not in attendance, then the alternate should raise their hand as well. And these are the people who will receive the straw ballots. At that point, we want to ask primaries and their alternates to take some time and confer how they would want to respond to that right-hand column, and then to fill out the votes with a yes or no on each row, and then to come to me and hand them to me one at a time so I can mark you off to show that each sheet has voted. And I think Ed Tavasiev has a clarifying question.
I was just going to get down and just say, is it possible just to take a vote whether we really want to do this or what? And the other thing I was thinking about was, what if we take a vote and decide we don't want it to go forward to the BRTF?
No electioneering within 50 feet of the polls, Mr. Bernard. Are there any primaries who did not get a ballot? Please raise your hand. Mike? Huh?
And these are anonymous.
Anonymous.
No names.
Wait. Before you...
Wait, hold up one sec. I'm going to come over here. So just follow me over here.
I'll block the aisle.
About what?
So if you guys can just hold on to your ballots for a minute, we're just getting a list to check off each person.
What is the problem with the column?
Oh, you got the extra bag. Good for you.
We're not. Yeah. I don't think that's what it is. It's different information.
It might be one item, and if they can tease that part out,
Just want to announce the polling station is in the to the left with Eric and staff over there. So when you're ready, turn those in, and we'll check you off.
Is this still live? Yeah. So for the 1-3 group, we have 1-3 group members. We have a small live issue with respect to an MPA and an allowable take. If we could just huddle in this corner for a minute, I think we could probably work it out quite quickly.
It never ends.
It never ends, Sean. No. It never ends. I just said goodbye to you twice. Yes. That corner up there, right? It pertains to allowable uses at Duxbury.
And actually, if Proposal 4 would get together for just 2 seconds, I need to clarify one thing. So maybe in the boardroom, Proposal 4, are you paying attention? Please?
Okay, so we're going to take a break. The 1-3 group needs to huddle and confer on one MPA, so we'll adjourn for the time being. So I'd like to ask you to reconvene here. We have only one more topic that we want to consider with you as we wrap up our work in the regional stakeholder group, and that is obviously we, the I-team, do not cannot control the agenda for the Blue Ribbon Task Force nor their operating procedures, but we can certainly offer ideas and suggestions. And so what we want to do now is to invite you to make suggestions as to what the briefing to the BRTF should include. If you have ideas about content, about format, who should do the briefing, any of those topics, we would welcome your ideas. So who has thoughts? Thinking ahead to the joint meeting of the BRTF, it is their meeting, but you're invited. You've seen how that format works. What suggestions do you have that might make that April 22nd meeting as useful as possible? Ben.
I'm sure you guys have thought about it, but, you know, the co-leads give a, I don't know, probably take 20 minutes per proposal.
Walk through each proposal.
In detail, you know, rationale.
Somewhat like you did at the last meeting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that would be a good way to organize it.
So big picture objectives, then each geography kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that's one idea. Other suggestions? Yeah, Ken.
Ditto, Ben. And then just secondly, an opportunity if we have special interests where we could testify before them.
Yeah, testimony is an option that's available to any member of the public. And one thing I guess we have to figure out is, does that sort of become automatic for the RSG on the first day?
Okay.
And I think my preference would be is if you outside of if the co-leads or the team or however you put it together, that then that be during public comment. Or if there's something specific, as we've done before with public comment, where three or four of you want to yield your time to one person so that person gets a chance to explain something, I think during the public comment process, then it's something that's consistent and it's been done before, and we can agendize the presentations.
Okay. Bob Wilson?
Well, one thing we might consider is, you know, across these different platforms that we have, there are some areas where there's a lot of consistency, and maybe if a staff person could go through and explain the similarities and the differences in an objective fashion without and then have the co-leads come in and explain what their rationales were for differences and whatnot, that might be beneficial to them.
Right, and we've done a similar, I think, format in the past of having staff, often it's Mary Gleason, kind of walk through the different proposals. Phil.
Well, what I'm envisioning, I don't know if it would actually happen, but I envision that the Blue Ribbon Task Force sitting across the table from the RSG so that they can ask us questions and get clarification and, you know, some real interaction, at least on the first day, and then they'll have more to deliberate with on their second day.
So a format that allows for give and take, posing questions. And
yeah, I think the way you set up the tables is going to be really important.
And that was a concern that we had, Phil, about just getting all of this group interacting with five BRTF and trying to get it down to maybe perhaps the co-lead or agreed that we would not have what could it turn out into a very long, long discussion as opposed to a more focused discussion to get them focused on the
right. Well, perhaps, you know, along with, you know, the tables facing each other, there could be some protocol, you know, like that they would have to actually ask us before we could just blurt out comments at them or whatnot.
Sure. Yeah. Can try and create some guidelines. Ben?
Just a couple clarifying questions. I assume it's a two-day meeting?
Yes.
And so we'll be, this just kind of roughly...
The first day is, it's a two-day BRTF meeting, but the task force...
one day.
Yeah, or the stakeholder group would be basically the presentation of the proposals, the SAT advice, everything that could come out, and then briefing on each proposal would all be the first day. And as Chair Golding said yesterday, she said, and if we're done and we're ready, then let's start deliberating. But, you know, the stakeholder meeting would be to be part of that introduction and explanation before they served up any decision.
Right. It's calendared right now as a two-day BRTF meeting, and we're basically saying let's make the first day joint.
Okay,
that's
and you're presuming that all of us are invited to sit there on the first day?
And, yes.
Okay.
That's right. And just to be clear, we also want to actually have some recognition of the efforts of the RSG, and that would take place that day too. So we, you know, this is a meeting we really want everyone to come to.
Like an award ceremony.
I don't know. It's never happened before.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. Tom Beatty and Ed Tavasiev.
Yeah. Ken, did I understand you correctly that you were thinking about having the RSG speaking to the Blue Ribbon Task Force during the public comment session?
Well, I'm trying to, you know, manage the size of this group and how we focus in on the proposals and not get into a lot of debate on various stakeholder positions, but rather focus on these three good proposals. And so I that's why I'm thinking the better thing would be if you've got something that you feel you need to comment about, to do that during the public comment, and that we really focus on the proposals, the more time on the geographies and the kind of things you've just been doing today, I think that really informs the Blue Ribbon Task Force as much as possible. I'm just concerned about everybody weighing in and trying to, if the co-lead seems to be, you know, maybe a more focused approach.
Okay.
Or
thanks
however.
For the clarity. It's good.
Yeah, and just, you know, if you contrast this with the Central Coast, it was really the co-leads who were invited to speak to the BRTF, and we're proposing to change that format this time around. Ed Tavasiev and then Bill Bernard.
How informed are the BRTF going to be when they do start, when we get to there? Are they going to have good foreknowledge, or are they going to just be seeing this for the first time, and at what level are they going to be seeing it?
They have received a briefing, multiple briefings on your progress. They received a briefing on the last proposal already. They are not up to speed on the newest revisions, but then you just made them. So I think they'll be pretty up to speed. They also will have received multiple briefings from the SAT over the months. So they're very much steeped in this issue, I would say.
And I would tell you that obviously we prepare before every meeting a binder and, you know, all these things. Melissa and I have decided that we are going to personally go see each of them to make sure that there's lots of understanding of the process and make sure that we don't have any communication. No, she knows it. No, it is because we, like anybody, they're busy people, and now that we're down to the final most important part, we want to really get them focused, and that's so that's our intention, is to make sure that all the information that's available, that we go through it and answer any questions and serve that up.
Right. Bill Bernard?
Yeah, I was going to actually kind of build off what Phil was saying there. I do think the idea of the leads presenting the packages is a good idea, but there's also different specialists that we, and it's not surprising this is coming from me. You know, so for my instance, you know, just to be there to answer a question that may be asked of them, one of the technical parts of it and stuff like that, and whatever question they may have, and help support the proposal that you're, you know, your position's on them.
That was, in fact, the thinking that the BRTF might have a very specialized question that a specialized member of the RSG could answer. So, Ellen and Ben and Patty. Ellen.
I'm not sure I was next, but I'll do it. Would it be possible to, I mean, I am concerned, I think there is a definite advantage in having the co-leads present the gist of the proposal in each of the areas. I'm a little concerned about whether there would be timely opportunity for other RSG comment if we wait and do it during a more delayed public comment period. How about, I thought it was really helpful to do the side-by-side comparisons and to do it sub-region by sub-region. If we did that, if it was structured that way with the BRTF, then they could see where there were congruent MPA clusters, and then focus on the places where there were alternatives for them to consider. The co-leads could provide, you know, a description of an MPA in, you know, in each of the proposals. And if there was an opportunity after each of the sub-region presentations for other RSG comment, we can keep that really limited to, you know, 5 minutes or something like that. But it would give the opportunity for some of us to say, you know, to weigh in a little bit in, you know, a more specialized RSG frame rather than waiting for general public or waiting for the whole thing to be presented and going back and trying to remind them again with a lot of background information what it was we were concerned about.
Got it. So it's sort of a sequence that would have kind of co-leads introduce, project side by side as we did in this room. And by the way, Chair Golding found that extremely useful.
Like all of us did.
And then, but into that fold an interval of time for RSG comments. Some sequence like that.
Folding.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing that the commission has used as a, when people have an interest in speaking on multiple topics, and I know some of you are shyer than others, but they have said that you can, you know, they try to have a 2 or 3 minute rule per speaker, but a cumulative time of, you know, 10 minutes. So you will not be speaking, say, to the commission for more than 10 minutes. So you decide how you're going to allocate your time and just don't get up and speak on every issue. Because that's the concern as running a meeting, as I don't want every one of you to feel that you have to get up and speak on every section. And I, that would not go well, I think, with the Blue Ribbon Task Force. And I'm not would be appropriate. But I hear what you're saying and the expertise when, you know, we have a former ranger from Fitzgerald. We have an abalone expert. They got a question. Let's, you know, direct that to those people and maybe have it a little more managed so we do keep control of the time, but still have the opportunity for everybody to interact.
Good. I have Ben, Patty, Rick, and Samantha.
Yeah, I guess just second what Bill said. You know, Bill was a key guy in terms of helping us out in the north. And so having him available, not just the work team separation anymore, but having Bill available to comment on his contribution to our proposal is super important. In terms of approaching it regionally, I think there's some value in that, but I also think that the BRTF will also have those maps in front of them from the get-go, the three comparisons. And I think there's a lot of value in presenting these as a cohesive network, a cohesive proposal. And I think you lose a little bit of it, you know, as you bounce around.
That can be
right. Perhaps a little bit of what we did yesterday, where you have both an overview presentation and have the side by side walkthrough.
Good, thank you. So I have Patty, Rick, Samantha, and Ed. Patty,
I just have a dumb question.
No questions are dumb questions.
It's a process question. So the BTRF are only receiving these three proposals. There's no more outside public proposals coming to them?
So not a dumb question at all. It's a great question, and that's correct. I mean, remember, we entertained external proposals.
Yes.
They were in a big pool. We were told to winnow the pool. So, no, there are no external proposals.
Okay.
Great question. Rick.
Microphone, Rick.
If the members of the work group or the people who are interested in the proposal, and I'm thinking particularly of 13, If we can have some communication about points that we want to make ahead of time, and then we can be sort of deciding, sure. It may be something that one of the leads can just summarize in a sentence, or it may warrant, you know, passing the mic to another person. But we might self-organize ourselves a little bit of how we want to use that 10 minutes.
Exactly. And there's enough lead time.
Communicate amongst us. What are the key points we want to make? Mm-hmm.
So plan on doing a little self-organizing before the meeting. Samantha and then Ed.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Doing as much self-organizing as we can, but then allowing... I think ideally, you know, you'd have them set up kind of like it is today, and you'd give them the overview, kind of like where you came from, who your group is, that kind of thing. Talk about the network maybe as a whole. I know this is all in 20 minutes, so it's tough, but talk about the network as a whole if you want. And I did actually think that going today the way we did, subregion by subregion, it was really, really useful in sort of informing the way that choices were made, you know, why we made choices, which choices were made. I mean, I've found that at other Blue Ribbon Task Force meetings, when it's like one group goes through their entire presentation, then the next one, the next one. I mean, you really do. It's really hard to see the choices made like you could today. And I thought that was really useful. And then I think absolutely, you know, maybe after, I don't know if you'd want to do it subregion by subregion. You know, the co-leads say, okay, and here are the MPAs in the subregion, and then self-organize as much as you can. And then if Bill Bernard has some special interest thing he wants to say, then, you know, hand the mic to him with some kind of total maximum cap or something for the day. Not just Bill, but for everyone.
And not just abalone harvest either.
Right. Okay. So untrue. Okay, anyway, so that's pretty much what I have to say.
Okay. I think you did just fine, Bill. Ed and Phil.
I was wondering, with all the similarities that are very, very close, and in some places like Point Reyes that are exactly the same, perhaps staff could present a basic overall presentation, and then the rest of the group, or the co-leads and leads, could actually get down into the differences and explain it that way for the sake of time.
Good suggestion, Ed. Thanks. Phil.
Okay, I think it's really important that we have the whole study area set up side by side, in addition to running through these subregions, because it's really, I think it's easy to get lost when we do it typewriter fashion like this. So
you can see the whole array.
I think it's really important to see the whole array, all three of them side by side, and then in another part of the room, perhaps we can have projectors and go.
That's a good point
for the close-ups.
Good. Good, Francesca.
Just a suggestion that all of the arrays and the maps be on the same scale.
Mm-hmm. And with the same underlying map layer, too?
Same colors.
Same font. Okay. Good suggestion. Good. Any other ideas? These are great suggestions. Thank you very much. Ken, do you want to add anything, or did you...
This is very helpful. We will try to craft an agenda with working with the Blue Ribbon Task Force members and listening to them, but also making sure we share this with them. And I think it'll be a very successful meeting. And as those who did this before, as I said, four of our five, this is the second time around. They are very happy with where we are, and I think we've got a great chance to keep them there and just keep serving this up and giving them. To your point, Patty, there's three distinct proposals. There's options. They're all within the guidelines. It's what you choose and where you go, and you have a healthy and open debate. So I think we've really got them in that place.
Mike.
What's our recourse if something happens similar to the Central Coast? They take this and they just change it all.
Well,
we feel like our work was for nothing. Where does that leave us?
You could egg their homes.
I think the first answer is that you come and make a very strong statement for the integrity of the proposals at the beginning of their meeting. That's one thing you can do. As far as recourse, I think encouragement to, you know, honor the work of the RSG, of course, and also, of course, there's a Fish and Game Commission. So none of the I-team can predict what the Blue Ribbon Task Force is going to do. It's actually a hobby of ours, trying to guess, and we can't. And we spent a lot of time trying to figure it out.
That's our last shot as a commission.
the commission... But you get
well,
Mike.
It's not our only hobby.
The issue is obviously it will go to the commission, and that. But what we've, because of your work, been able to frame it up in most of these geographies, there's three choices, yeah. And a lot of times they're going to pick one of those three choices or mix them up or whatever, but in a much more focused and founded and framed way than last time.
Well, and we're also fairly sure there's not going to be a staff alternative S. We're also entirely sure there's not going to be a fish and game staff alternative. So already the process is a lot simpler than the Central Coast. And that's good news. I mean, that helps, I think. Any other thoughts, wishes? Astrid. Are you addressing that to a specific RSG member or us?
I turned off my BlackBerry a long time ago.
Astrid.
All these mics. I had sort of a harebrained idea, a question. And this is just the geek in me speaking. So in the event of Mike's concern, that, or as you just characterized it, they take and they shuffle it all up, did you archive all the shapes that all the groups tried and discarded for whatever reasons, just on the off chance that the BRTF, you know, considers a shape, and then you have to go, no, we tried this, and it's bad because of XYZ?
Yeah, they are archived. And there will be GIS capabilities at the BRTF.
Right.
That's right. All right.
Mike, I always say we don't do perfect. I mean, close counts here. This is working well.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to credit all of you with, you know, whether or not you wanted to do this, you've all become process geeks. So congratulations. Without even taking our course, but I think the level of attention to detail is very impressive. It really is, and it's certainly distinctive in this region. And I think the BRTF needs to know how invested you are. And so that's another message I think that you need to convey, not only the content but your personal commitment, which has been huge. Ben,
just a dumb technical question. I know the department's going to look at things like feasibility and potentially make suggestions for changes. So, and that'll just be on the feasibility side of things, your suggestions for changes, and I assume you'll present the original and the suggested change.
And that'll be agendized, the memo that John Ugritz put out, you know, to the feasibility. That was what was to be different. And this MOU, there will not be a department alternative. Their preferences are going to be expressed all along the process. Of course, Susan's been leading the team here to express that throughout the process, and then it'll be agendized at the BRTF, and it'll be agendized at the commission too, because the department will weigh in at every part of the process.
Okay, Ken, is there any more business? Are we done for the day?
I just
Phil?
Said one more.
Phil,
one last comment. Maybe perhaps we could politely express our displeasure with the Blue Ribbon Task Force picking and choosing out of each of these arrays, because I think that might open up the door for all kinds of lobbying and politicking for certain geographical areas that everybody has some interest in. So maybe just a polite statement at the beginning of it to say that we would be relieved if the Blue Ribbon Task Force would choose one of the arrays or the other.
Yeah, I'm thinking that expressing that view in the positive would probably attract more positive response. Ken, anything else?
Did you get a chance to count some votes, Melissa? Do we want to hear a tally today? Email. Patty turned her email off.
She already turned off email. So I have one question that I need answered before we can provide the information. We did ask in that final column for each of the three proposals to indicate a yes or a no. One individual, and I don't need to know who that person is at the moment, but one individual chose to use X's.
on instead of a yes or a no.
But you said not to sign your name.
So I'm going to tell you what assumption we made. If it was correct, you don't need to come forward and speak to us. If it is not correct, that will change the vote. Our assumption was that that individual marked an X on the 2 or 3 or 1 that they were that they could live with. So if that is not correct, then we need to know that. Otherwise, if it is correct, and I'm not hearing any...
Well, or we will change the vote later after somebody calls us anonymously.
In which case, if Paulo, you want to put the vote up on the screen?
So yes means yes, I could live with this being a recommendation. No means I could not. And we counted all 24, right? 22.
I was wondering why my math.
Yeah, no, we had two. 22. Absence.
Okay. So this is just information. Huh.
Right. It's important to recognize this is information, and it makes sense in context of the discussion that will take place at the BRTF meeting.
Okay. All right. Any parting shots from the...
No. Thank you all for fabulous.
Actually,
fabulous
there is
day.
One more. I think we want to recognize...
Why don't we take that off the screen?
We want to recognize our colleague, Chad, who is moving on to other work at the MPA Center, and we want to thank him for his teamwork and great support of this project. So I wanted to end on that positive note. Yes, he's gone.
And that we look forward to seeing everyone on the 22nd of
yes,
April.
Yes, we will be assembling an agenda for the BRTF meeting in the next couple of weeks, no doubt, and it must be transmitted by what date, Melissa, would you say? Just pick one.
It's somewhere around the 15th.
A nice friendly day, the 15th of April.
I think it was tax day. I don't remember for sure, but
right.
I think it was the 15th.
So you will be getting an agenda, and the venue is here in Marin County. Have we finalized it yet? We have not. Okay. Ken.
I would just like to nominate Delbra for our American Idol. She really helped out a tremendous amount.
That's great. All right. All right. Dave Yarger.
I just had one
You're a funny guy today.
I have one quick question. You know, the last RSG meeting I had to finish the show, and I just wondered if I could do it today. Is it too late for the Fishermen's Marketing Association to send in another proposal?
Well, you're going to have to get it by Patty, because I told her there weren't any more. All right. Thank you very much. Karen.
Okay, so I just want to ask the fours to step into the boardroom for 1 minute before we leave.
The fours. All right.
Good. All right. Yeah, and I have, if we're all done, I have one parting request for everybody. Because I'm a firm believer in communal song, perhaps we can close the day by singing Happy Birthday to Darcy.
With your microphones off.
Yeah, really.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Great job, everybody.
All right, thanks. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.